everyone, and welcome to episode 133 of Rain Delay Radio, a baseball podcast. My name is Naim. Today we got some news for you. We got some discussion of the Fangraphs trade value column that came out this past week, as well as some trade deadline ideas. And joining me for this whole episode, we've got Pat. How's it going, Pat?
What's going on? It's great. Good Sunday. I got to go play some Magic at the local game store. Had a lot of fun with that. Good day.
And Dylan, how's your Sunday been?
Very good. Been relaxing this weekend. I actually just came back from a work trip from St. Louis. So I got to see your Cardinals in action. They actually won a game.
They beat the Marlins.
Beat the Marlins.
They swept the Marlins.
On a little bit of a, I mean, I guess, you know, maybe not this weekend, but they're doing better, I guess.
Well, so yeah, this weekend also wasn't bad. There was like some, you know, there was some umpire shenaniganry. There was one, today's game. Hey, that's a loss. You can't correct that with anything. There was a six ball strikeout. No, it was a double play, but whatever.
Yeah.
With bases loaded, like that stuff you get mad about. A 7-2 loss. Hey man, we lost that game.
It happens. Yeah.
You know, can't do anything about that one.
But Busch Stadium was cool. The people love themselves some Lars Nootbaar, I think, is the one thing that I learned from St.
Louis. You know, it's interesting, right? Because last year, you know, he was like a kind of interesting guy, but I think the WBC, and we've talked about it a bunch this season, his not only like his performance, but also like he was clearly like a fun story. Yeah. And so obviously that got big nationwide, but when a nationwide story breaks about a St. Louis player, then St. Louis gets super behind that player too. So
yeah, he's a vibes guy. I appreciate it.
And not just nationwide, worldwide. He's huge in Japan, you know?
But yeah, other than that, doing great.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, there's not a ton of news to talk about, but we do have a lot of fun stuff after the news. So let's talk about the news. The first thing on this list, I will say, again, I love the people behind the curtain. Pat wrote our outline. So the first thing that Pat put on the outline here was the Angels are likely to wait 24 to 48 hours before the trade deadline to decide on what to do with Ohtani.
So it's waiting a week. The news is, hey, we won't know for another week.
we won't know even like by the time we record the next episode, we still might not know.
We're speculating speculation at this point.
It's like when there's a trailer for a trailer, you know?
Yeah. Teaser.
Yeah, well, no, but not a teaser. Like, there's a teaser for, like, they tweet, like, tomorrow the trailer drops and show you 2 seconds of the trailer.
True.
Well, Dan, you gotta look away, Kuhan. You don't watch the trailers.
100%. That is correct.
Look away from the news. Yeah, he's gonna step away for about 3 minutes.
I gotta step away and not watch this news about Shohei Ohtani. Yeah. News about potential news of Shohei Ohtani. I mean, you know, it seems like a bad idea to wait that long to make a decision for a player that, like, if you're trading him, you want to be getting a lot of teams talking about it, right? And if you're not, then you're not. I get that. But, like, it seems like you want to start talking about it now and then in a week be like, hey, we changed our minds where we feel like we might get that third wild card, you know?
I mean, I'm sure every team is making the phone call whether the Angels are ready for the phone calls or not, right? Like, as someone that's, you know, I'm a big Braves fan, the Braves are not trading for Shohei Ohtani, right? But Anthopoulos has made the phone call, right?
Yeah,
like,
of course.
What do we have to do? Like, what are you hearing?
I'm sure Dombrowski has made it, too. Yeah,
I am sure that applies. Right. I mean, think of just the money you'd make with the dude on your team. Like, if you could just take him for cash, you'd be like, well, you know, yeah. So I think there's at least, like, 15 teams, if not even more than that, that have just been like...
They're not 29,
We don't have a prayer, but... You know, hey,
sorry, 28. The A's aren't calling.
Yeah, the A's like that. That salary? Hell no.
Yeah. But like, I wouldn't be surprised if the Rockies gave a phone call. Like, right, hey, we suck, and we're gonna suck.
He's gonna
like,
hit 600.
Did you see the Twitter thread?
No.
There was a Twitter thread. They're like a season ticket holder. They emailed the Rockies, and they got a response back that having Shohei would be cool for 60 games.
That'd be awesome.
I mean, it would, you know?
Objectively, like, awesome.
And at Coors, like, oh, man, can you, you know? Like, if you want him to break Judge's home run record, well, I guess not. It wouldn't be Judge's record. But if you want him to get it close to Bond's record, right? Like, yeah. Or if you want to say, like, blah, 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 whatever, non-steroid record, like, stick Shohei Ohtani in Coors, that's fun. And, by the way, he's also going to hit a ton of triples there, too.
Yeah.
It's the most fun outcome, yeah. I think. Yeah. It's one of the most fun outcomes.
So, I mean, there's been a lot of, like, I mean, I think this kind of, I'm a diehard Effectively Wild listener. That's kind of my primary baseball podcast, right? And they've examined all the angles of the show.
Sorry, it's your secondary baseball podcast, your primary baseball podcast.
Listening wise, you know, I am the number one supporter, yeah, of this podcast as a whole. But yeah, as far as the one that I listen to, they also have 3 episodes a week.
They have a lot more episodes. Yeah, they get paid money to make their podcast.
They've been going on for like a long
time.
Listen,
give me the platform. I can complain about the Phillies 3 days a week. All right, no problem.
I mean, that'll be our next podcast, I think, is Phillies Chat 3 days a week. So they had a full podcast where they literally, it's sort of what we're going to be doing later, not quite, but they had 21 different trade offers for Shohei Ohtani from like a bunch of different baseball online people, like Foolish Bailey was one of them, lots of the writers, and they were basically just like, they had Ben Clemens basically figure out what's the best possible offer we can get for Shohei, but also examining, is it worth it? Like, you know, like, is this is so different than every other situation we've ever experienced, because this guy is so singular as far as his impact and the talent level and being a rental. You know what I mean? We saw the Juan Soto thing.
Right.
But Juan Soto, you could say, well, you know, if it doesn't work out this year, we got a couple more years left of him. You know, we can give up James Wood and all these guys.
Well, and you know, to sort of peek ahead a bit with the Fangraph trade value column, right? Shohei was 26th last year and has gone up to 25th this year, despite having less team control.
It's such a no players know, like, ever. If Barry Bonds was a rental, I think, you know, if this situation happened with Barry Bonds, you know, minus steroids and all the stuff that came with that, but like,
whatever. Yeah. In the era, you know, you're what you're expecting with the production.
If
exactly.
The best player on the planet by like multiple magnitudes was available at the trade deadline, you'd still be like, well, we're only getting this amazing player for a couple months. We can't go crazy. But like, Shohei is basically like a traveling circus, a worldwide traveling circus. Plus, he's the best player. Plus, he plays two different positions. Like, it's just like mind numbing. And it's just, I think there is completely a possibility the Angels just say, you know, like, players are cool, but like, we'd rather just roll the dice. And every day that Shohei is here matters more than, you know, a top 20 prospect or whatever. So I think that if you go into my head, I think that's what happens. Whether that's smart or not, I just don't know.
I also think he is staying with the Angels, at least through the end of this season. I do think, I mean, and I said this in our Slack chat, I do think the funniest possible outcome is if he signs an extension with the Angels. Yeah. I think that's, I mean, like, it would like suck because the Angels can't win anything. You know, they have two generational talents and they can't win anything with them. But I feel like largely we as a baseball discussing society have not like talked enough about the, I think, you know, probably close to, and this is what you said, like close to like 10 to 20% chance or something like that, that he stays with the Angels. Like, that's a pretty high percentage.
It's an uncomfortable percentage.
You know, for us to like just never mention. You know, like,
that goes up if they make the playoffs too.
That's true. Yeah. You know, like, he likes playing there, you know, like, it's probably the shortest flight to Japan from LA. Like, there's not like, there are reasonable, you know, I'm sure he likes, I mean, obviously he likes, you know, Mike Trout, like, there's a lot going on for him staying in Anaheim. And I do think that we are underrating that possibility, but we'll see what happens in the offseason. We'll see what happens in a week and a half, if he ends up leaving the Angels or not. But yeah, I agree. Pat, what's your thought? Do you think they're trading him or not?
I think they're going to end up trading him.
Yeah.
But then, I don't... here's where I'm torn. It depends on how they do this week.
Yeah, that is totally true.
Yeah. Well, that's what they're saying.
They go 6-0, they're not trading. 0% chance.
No.
That's true.
Even if they go 5-1 or 4-2, I still don't think they're trading them. If they pass the Yankees and Red Sox, I don't think he's going anywhere.
Like, I think I might change my mind. You know what I mean? Like, because it's like that varies on all
those. It's just so complex. Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, they get the Tigers this week, by the way, they're
6-4 in their last 10, so it's not like they are on a sort of solid-ish stretch. They are better at home on the road, and they are on the road this week. So, I mean, if that's the difference, like, if the difference is that they're playing their games in, you know, Comerica and Rogers Center instead of at Angel Stadium, and, like, that's why they trade Shohei, what a weird world we live in.
Well, this week they get the Tigers, and then they get the Blue Jays.
They do get the Tigers, which is good for them. And then they get the Blue Jays, which is not as good. And then they get the Braves, at which point they might have already decided not to trade him.
So, like they sweep the Tigers and take one from the Jays. I don't think he's going anywhere.
So, do they not play at home again before the deadline?
It's Tigers, Blue Jays, Braves, and then they play at home for the next seven
games. They don't go back to Anaheim.
Shohei's last home game would be today.
Yeah.
If it is.
I mean, that's crazy. So yeah, I mean, this is kind of, we have set the table. I think everyone's going to be watching a lot of Angels games this week, you know.
Yep.
He did.
By the way, he did hit a home run today. So if that was his last game, if his last game in Anaheim as an Angel, then at least he went out on the bang, right?
Yep.
Did y'all see it too? Man.
Oh, he's so nasty.
Laser beam. It was like 19 launch angle or something. So it was just like a straight laser to center field. It was tight.
It's insane. I feel like we're also not talking enough about the fact that he leads the league in dribbles.
Yeah.
Like he just does it all. It's insane. And by the way, it's 7 this year. He had 8 in 2021 and led the league that year too.
Yep. But
like,
It is worth noting he has slipped a little bit pitching recently. Just being transparent about it. Like, he's struggled a little bit. He's got apparently like a fingernail issue that's kind of hurting.
He started on Friday, 5 earned runs, 6 innings, and then
he's gotten hit by some home runs and stuff.
His last three games, he's given up 5 earned runs in 5 or 6 innings, but you know.
Yeah. I mean, but
things happen to pitchers.
Is that like adjusting the trade value? Not really.
No,
you know? But
no,
I just wanted to be realistic about it.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Bryce Harper is now playing first base. The plan is for now to play first every other day. I saw that really nice play he made jumping into the, not quite the stands, but that was cool. Pat, I know you've been excited for the Bryce Harper first base experience.
He's a freaking cyborg, I swear to God. Like, he starts playing first base, and it looks like he's played it his entire career. Like, he has not looked bad there, and he's made some incredible plays.
So, catching prospect Bryce Harper, right?
Yeah.
True.
It's ridiculous what he can do. And it's great because Schwarber's not in the field now, which is the big win. But
that's what we've been specifically excited about is Kyle Schwarber not having to play.
I think I'm more excited about Schwarber not being in the field than Harper being on the field.
Not that Schwarber's offense, by the way, has been like incredible.
No, but since they've moved him up to the leadoff spot, he's looked like the Schwarber we know.
130 strikeouts.
He's coming
for Kyle Schwarber later.
He's coming for Ryan Howard's record. Here
it
comes.
I've got some Kyle Schwarber for you later.
Oh no.
Just astounding. I think I brought this up in Slack the other day. I do believe now Schwarber has more strikeouts this year than Luis Arraez has in his career. No, it's 153 in his career for Arraez and 130 this year for Schwarber.
That's crazy.
He'll pass it. Oh, he'll definitely pass it. It's just a question of when, not if.
I love Kyle Schwarber so much. And, you know, I'm glad he's not on the field, but I will love that man throughout the rest of his career. He makes me happy.
What a just a goofy guy, you know?
What a guy.
Hey, speaking of trades, we're going to talk more about trades in a bit, but the stove is hot. The Oakland Athletics traded Shintaro Fujinami to the Baltimore Orioles. I don't think we have any takes. I mean, you know.
Actually, I have a slight take. It's not a real take.
Oh, yeah. No.
I think if you, I mean, he has like a 10 ERA and then gave up two runs in his first.
8.82,
right? It was well over 10 to start the season.
At some
if
point
you watch,
10, yeah.
If you just forgot that stats existed and just watched him pitch, you'd be like, whoa. That guy looks crazy because he throws like 101. He has like a wipeout splitter. It's like a reliever Otani.
You're probably,
you know what
yeah,
I mean?
You're probably
it's
thinking
like,
to yourself, man, this guy might be the best reliever in baseball. And then you
yeah,
look at
he's
his
got
stats.
Sick stuff. And then you're like, oh no.
just can't find results.
I actually totally get why the Orioles took a dart throw at him, because it's like he's totally worthless on the, you know, Athletics at this point, and he throws super hard, and what team has maximized these hard throwing freak shows over the last couple of years than the Orioles?
Yeah.
So I actually really like the fit, and I think it's an interesting trade to make at this point. What, like, could he just be DFA'd in like 3 weeks? Like, probably, but it's cool. And I think he has the chance of being really good, and he has actually been really good over the last couple of months. It's just a matter of what's his true talent level. I have
he's been
comprehension of
fine over the last couple of months. Let's not,
he had like a 2.5 ERA over the last like 2 months.
He's got like a 3.5 ERA over the last 2 months.
Okay, well, he just let up two runs in like,
well, yeah, but like in June, yeah, like in June, he had a 3.5 ERA and he's got a 4.5 okay. in July. So he's been right. fine. He's been fine.
Anyway,
it's
he's been
serviceable.
Much better.
He's been serviceable.
He's 3 months into his major league career.
Right. Right. No,
if
he's a
3.5 reliever,
that's
worth
it's totally
acquiring,
fine.
You know, so.
Absolutely agree. He has zero Fangraphs WAR, which is, again, that's totally like serviceable for a player.
Yeah.
Negative two baseball reference WAR.
Baseball reference is like, no, this is not it.
Well, he's got a 5 FIP. You know, he's got a 5 FIP, which is like, okay, like this dude might be something. And he's
level.
Got, you know.
Yeah.
His RA 9 is like 9, which is like, okay, that's not something. So
he's,
okay. But his RA 9 actually is exactly 9. He's got a 9.00 RA 9. So
it's like, you know, the burner has been turned on. It's not hot.
Yeah.
It's
no,
spark.
Listen, the stove's not hot yet, but like,
we're
you know,
getting
there's always got to be
a
trade, you know. You're never going to have the Shohei Ohtani trade be the one that opens the stove, right? Like, that's.
We're still chopping the, you know, vegetables, still chopping the sausages. You
exactly.
know, we're still on
rolling the pasta.
You know, yeah, rolling the pasta.
Yeah,
rolling
yeah.
water.
You got to get the water to a simmer, you know,
yeah,
and then.
Exactly.
You got to salt it. You got to make sure you salt the water, you know.
Fujinami is our salt.
He's our salt.
Yeah. All right. Well, we got a couple of call-ups in the National League Central. The Reds called up Christian Encarnacion Strand, finally.
it took them long enough.
Like, I get they've called up a lot of dudes this year and they've all been really good, but like Christian Encarnacion Strand was destroying AAA,
like
just annihilating.
Better.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, it was a 331, 405, 637. It's like, and he plays, he's a first baseman. It's like, you're not like really making a big impact on his defense, you know, which is like what, like, for example, the Cardinals did with Jordan Walker. Like, okay, I get it. He can't play defense. You got to figure that out. If you're doing a guy who's like a DH first baseman, like, okay, do it now. So they finally called him up and he played a little bit of third base as well. Yeah, I mean, excited to see what he does. Also excited to see what Milwaukee Brewer Sal Frelick already, or Frelick,
God, I hate
already,
this guy.
Already did in his first game against the Braves. Just everything. The man did everything.
So annoying.
It was so,
I swear.
It was
like, stop,
yeah,
man, chill out.
It was an entire like series worth of annoyance in,
save
in 9
for the
innings.
Rest of the damn league, man, chill out.
He started with a little like just a little infield hit, and then just like a couple of insane defensive plays, and then like a couple of RBIs. Like, he just he like He didn't single-handedly win the game for the Brewers, but he certainly put in a lot of the work.
Certainly led the Brewers to a victory in his first game, yeah. Which is pretty nice. But yeah, he was really impressive. Almost did it again today. Not with the bat, but almost had a crazy catch against Travis d'Arnaud. Could not get it this time. Travis put it over his head once and then to like an inch past his glove the second time. So almost harassed us again.
I didn't send that TikTok to you, the South Felix TikTok. I think I thought about it and I was like, oh, Dylan already watched this live. Oh, he doesn't need to see this.
No, don't tell me about Sal Frelick. I am well versed.
It was a highlight reel of Sal Frelick plays. And I was like, and every single thing he did that day was like, this is like a highlight reel play. Yeah. Like, it's not like he was like, you know, it's like, oh, here's just like a couple of things. Like, no. He really he just hates the Braves. I don't know, man.
It's nice. I mean, you know, in a vacuum, not removing myself from the equation here. It's nice when a guy, and well, we can talk about, Encarnacion Strand actually kind of falls into this a little bit too, because he's done okay since he's been up too. It's nice when you get immediate, like, okay, this guy has like major league talent, right? Like, it doesn't need to be complete yet, right? It doesn't need to be all there. He doesn't have to save the world in a week, you know, but like, Sal Frelick showed the things that make him a major league caliber outfielder, right? He has great contact skills. He's obviously really athletic. It looks like, I think he could probably play center field with his range, but, you know, they just have other guys. So he should be right. an excellent right fielder. You know, I don't know if the power is going to be there, and, you know, on base skills kind of something that guys have to figure out. And then Strand is just obviously like, he can hit anything, it seems like, and hit it with power, and kind of the rest is TBD, but that's still impressive enough. So it's nice when you get these bite-sized entries for players and they are able to impress, even if small samples. Because like Ellie, you know, came up and just lit the world on fire. His stats right now don't look that great. But when you can prove right. that you can run, hit, throw, and, you know, hit harder, faster than everyone else, like, it's pretty cool and it's pretty impactful and it shows what you can be, especially when you're 20, 21, 22 years old. So,
yeah. Frelick, by the way, did have a pretty solid on base percentage in the minors.
Yeah, I just don't know
in college.
I don't know like that much about him.
No, I know. I just know. Like, I feel like walks are a kind of thing that like, if you can do it in single A, then you're not going to like forget how to do it, you know? So yeah.
He definitely seems like a pesky guy that you could bat lead off and not have to worry about it, which is a good place to be.
Yeah. And he's only a year and a half younger than Juan Soto.
Juan Soto trade deadline candidate.
Juan Soto trade deadline candidate for sure, absolutely.
The next 2 years,
forever.
Like, yeah. Juan Soto is now a mercenary.
Yeah.
At age 23.
You know, honestly, that's kind of that might be the most fun version of Juan Soto's career. Is just like, you know, doing what like Gary Sheffield did and playing for like 18 teams and like just being good for
that
all of them.
That would be pretty tight.
Like, yeah. I'm cool with that. That sounds fun.
It won't happen.
I could.
But you could imagine.
I could. Well, I doubt it. But
he
it
is
could,
going to get,
you
know? $1 billion.
Yeah, for sure. A guy who is not going to be playing a bunch and probably is not going to make $1 billion. to Jared Kelenic. Listen, sometimes these segues are a little bit forced, right? They happen. Jared Kelenic fractured his foot from kicking a water cooler can, which is, you know, like classic dumb injury.
Hey, Naim, don't kick a man while he's down.
Yeah, you know, it sucks, right? Like, that's, you know.
Yeah.
What can you say? Expected to be in a boot for 4 to 6 weeks. Likely won't be back until early September. And especially because like this is the year, you know, he's not like been. He's had flashes of being like a really really good ball player, and then flashes of like, okay, maybe he's not so much. But like this has kind of been the closest thing he's had to a breakout season. So to interrupt that definitely sucks for him and for the Mariners to an extent.
He started off the season super hot. Yeah. He was like the best hitter on their team by far, and it's cooled off significantly. Like, he hasn't been like the worst player on earth, but maybe closer to what he was, which was like the worst player on earth, you know?
That's a shame. So,
but I mean,
because I was excited to see him really start breaking out.
Yeah. And look, and by the way, again, he's 23, right? Like, he is. Yeah. He is again. He's like he is less
almost
than
Juan Soto age.
He's younger than Juan Soto and less than a year older than Sal Frelick. So like, you know, he certainly could still like put it together and like have something like he had in those first couple of months. But definitely not going to be in August.
Yeah, it's just in the fact that, you know, he hits this cold stretch. You know, I don't even know if call it a cold stretch. He's just, you know, kind of simmered down a little bit. And his frustrations get to the point where he feels the need to take it out on a damn water cooler. It's like,
yeah,
you know, 23 means a lot of different things to different people. And right. I think maybe this is a wake up call for him.
And for worth, like, you know, like
some form.
He had a flaming hot April, more, you know, and like a super cold June. But otherwise has been like a serviceable at worst, you know, which is like, you know, yeah. And you certainly like you see these kinds of things, right? Where like this, like the fact that he broke his foot kicking that, like, hey, everyone lets off steam sometimes, right? Like yeah. That'll happen. To break your foot doing that is like that. Then that you, when you're already kind of at a low point, that gets even worse, right? Like it just yeah. like, you know, it's it like sucks. Great. Now I have to deal with this, and I can't even like turn around on the field. So
yeah.
So sucks for Jared Kalanick, but hoping the best for his recovery.
And I guess we'll have to see. I didn't have any later for the Mariners as far as trades, but they're in a kind of weird spot. They've been just hovering around 500 all year, which is very uninspiring offensively. Great pitching, but just not there offensively. And this kind of lead, you know, especially with Julio not at the peak of powers, I don't necessarily doubt he'll get there eventually, whether that's this year or not, but I think they could probably afford maybe even a cheap outfielder, you know, like the Braves did a couple years ago where you just pick up right. guys on the fringes, hope they work out. Obviously it worked out very well, but you know, get a rental, well, throw them in left field, you know, and some stuff like that and see if you can make a tiny push without giving up too much.
I feel like, I think this was right before we recorded, they were talking about him, but I feel like Tommy Pham is either a perfect or awful fit for the Mariners. Nothing
yeah,
in between.
Exactly. Yeah. I have Tommy Pham listed later. He seems like kind of the ideal guy for that situation, but obviously we know
based
what can go wrong with Tommy Pham.
The chemistry and makeup is a huge part of Tommy Pham's existence.
Yeah. based solely on vibes, he's a horrible fit for that team.
But he could be a great fit. Like his vibes are either all the way in or all the way out and nothing right. in between. Yeah. Sometimes he's yeah. got good vibes. It just depends on the team.
Yeah. If you're a winning organization or winning, actively
just
winning,
just
and you're
play
giving him
fantasy
playing
fantasy baseball
time
around or fantasy football around them.
Fantasy football around them. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Right. Right. I wonder. Yeah, I wonder if anybody from that league is on the Mariners. All right. Well, that is all of the news stuff we have. Let's talk a bit about the Fangraphs MLB trade value column. Dylan, what did you have here? You wanted to talk a little about this?
Yeah. So this is, I think, because we are in a unique situation where we all uniquely care a lot about, you know, kind of these exercises where we kind of look long term, right? We've done the sim, we've done franchise draft, yep. and we've done kind of similar exercises where we try to get the large scope of what these guys are worth and what they could be traded for and try to do our own math on that. And this is really interesting to see. I guess it's just Ben Clemens, right? Is he the only one kind of I think it gets some feedback, but Ben Clemens puts together this list. And it is the top 50 players in baseball, according to him and Fangraphs kind of writers that, you know, these are the best 50 players in baseball. These are the most valuable trade assets yeah. in baseball. So these guys would get the most back in a trade if they were traded. A lot of these guys are not going to be available for whatever reason. Obviously, they either have a lot of money owed to them or they're just so valuable that why would you ever trade them? Number one. You know, regaining his slot as number one was Ronald Acuña Jr. Obviously, he's on a reasonably cheap contract, and he is on a, 8-9 war pace right now. He's great, and there's no reason the Braves would
untradeable.
Ever trade him.
They're never going to, like, it just doesn't make any sense ever.
Lots of Braves on this list, you know? Which, you know, goes without saying.
The Braves are publicly available. I'm going to buy enough funds and trade
them. That's true, yeah. There's lots of Braves that won't get traded on this list, yeah. but you can buy the Braves.
And physically buy the Braves.
We didn't talk about, actually. That was, I think, something we probably should have mentioned.
Well,
that,
I think right now we aren't really clear if it means anything.
Yeah. Just, you know, just something worth mentioning that the Braves are going to be publicly traded.
Yeah. I'll buy a share. I'll figure out.
I'll buy a share. I'll own a major team. Why not?
And so I think it's worth bringing up because it creates some interesting discussion over guys that we were like, wow, that I'm surprised he wasn't higher, or guys where it's like, wow, I'm really surprised he was that high. And usually this comes from some younger guys. Like the entire top 10 is basically dominated by guys under 26. Like top 10 is Acuna, Wander Franco, Julio Rodriguez, Corbin Carroll, Adley Rutschman, Ellie De La Cruz. I think Ellie maybe put a bookmark on him there. Gunnar Henderson, maybe same boat, but he's been great. Tatis is, maybe he's one we want to talk about.
Tatis is a little low. I also want to bring up another.
Yeah.
I want to bring up Jackson Holliday with you with the discussion we had in Slack. I want you to give that. Yeah.
Yes. So, you know, lots of young guys that are considered either stars or stars in the making in the case of like Ellie and Gunnar. And then, you know, later in the list, we'll even get to guys on bigger contracts like Jose Ramirez, who is on a long term contract and is over. He's just turned 30. But like, it's Jose Ramirez. Of course. Why not? Juan Soto is at 29, despite only having a year left. We mentioned earlier, Otani's 25th without having any on his contract. So I just kind of wanted to pick y'all's brain. We've had some discussions about this, but if there's anyone that maybe jumps out to you, you know, Pat, you mentioned Tatis, but is there anyone else that you're like, wow, I'm really surprised this guy was there, or he was too low, too high?
I think one thing that's interesting is how many new names are on this
there's
list.
There's a lot of people who have
because the list specifically has like ranked and then previous year, and there's a lot of people who are like honorable mentions last year, but then like, you know, guys like you said, Ellie, and then like Anthony Volpe, Matt McClain, Luis Castillo, Hunter Brown. Like, there's a lot of names on this list. Lars Nootbaar,
it's like half the list
who were not on. Like something like half the list is like
either honorable mentions or brand new,
which is I mean, I think you know, in terms of baseball, like that's neat to see, you know, like just like all these dudes who are young and like whether they're on this team in a year or in 5 years, like where I think we're kind of seeing where the generation shifts in baseball. Mm-hmm. Like this is what we're seeing right now, which I think this list kind of crystallizes for me.
Yeah. So some dudes, I mean, obviously like James Wood 50 and Jackson Holliday not being on the list, I don't like. Which Dylan will get more into because
I will.
We had a whole conversation about this the other day. Bobby Witt is way too low.
I agree with that too. That was one of the ones I was very firm about. I think he's significantly too low.
I would have Witt above Volpe.
I'd have him above all the shortstops that he trails. Maybe like I think he should be around Bichette.
I have him behind Bo, but above the other guys.
Agreed.
You know, Vlad, I was a little torn on being this low, but I get it just because looking at the contract situation and all that.
Michael Harris may be a little high.
He's young, though. He's very young.
And on a super cheap contract for what?
Eight years on a crazy contract. That's true.
To talk about Michael Harris at the start of the year, I would agree.
And then he flipped the script very fast.
Like,
he turned the burners on. That's true.
Michael Harris is that dude.
Yeah.
And
a ton of Braves, even in the top 20.
Dawn Murphy being 12 is insane to me.
He jumped 25 spots after getting extended.
That contract is so dumb, and like I can't think about Sean Murphy too much because it just reminds me that we have Wilson Contreras instead of Sean Murphy. Like,
where did Wilson end up on the list?
Shut up.
Literally a third of the top 15 is Braves.
It's Braves. It's nuts.
It's insane to me. Like,
why do you think I wanted to talk about this?
It's astounding.
I'm gonna be real. I think Ozzy's a little too low too.
I can see it.
I'd have Ozzy above Francisco Alvarez.
I think they're pretty close. Yeah,
Ozzy's tough, right? Because he's so like he feels a little feast or famine sometimes.
It's also tough ranking guys that aren't like stars. You know, like he's like just really good,
right?
On a decent contract.
Zach Nettles is a really good contract. You know, like he's
That's like, what I mean. Like
you pay that much for like. I don't know. Like Tommy Pham. I think Tommy Pham is making the same amount of money as Ozzie Albies is this year, which is like stupid. That's stupid.
Contract's doing a lot of heavy lifting. Yeah. But obviously just he's one of those guys where if you said top 50 players in baseball, you'd be like, well, maybe the thing is,
he was 16th last year and he dropped down 15 spots. But I like that's interesting.
This year he's just been like as good as he had been in the past, which has been nice.
Right. Especially cause he was like not that great last year. So I do agree that that's kind of interesting. And the same thing with like Soto, like we mentioned, right? Like Soto's been, and I guess it is just, there's one less year of availability on him. Yeah. And you know, but I don't know.
I got one more.
Yeah.
I'm going to go Homer here. I'm taking Zach Neto off the list and putting Bryson Stott on it. I'm kind of surprised Stott's not on this.
I think you're right. I think Stott makes a lot of sense on this list. Yeah.
I think he's he'd probably be like an honorable mention or like maybe sneak in, you know, at the end for me. I think he's, if you were making a prospect list, it's kind of similar. Like the difference between like 45 and 60 probably is not significant. You know, so I would put him into that group. But Neto's tough because like we just haven't seen a lot of him yet. He's like still feels new because he was just drafted last year.
And Ke'Bryan Hayes still being here too. Like,
I mean, you know, the defense matter. And Naim, I don't know if you wanted to mention him, but Jordan Walker was one of the more interesting guys on this list. I don't think it's bad necessarily, but he landed on 43 here. Despite the fact his Zips projections, so he includes Zips projections with this table here, and Jordan Walker is like under one WAR for the next 5 years straight.
Yeah.
Because they basically think he's the worst right fielder to ever be born.
And I think that is, you know, I think it's a little bit of Clemens saying, look, he's not going to be as bad at like Zips. It looks at the numbers and doesn't put in like, you know, anything else, right? Which makes sense. That's what it's supposed to be.
Right.
I think it's like maybe a little bit of Dan like putting his finger on the scales, but not that much.
Yeah.
And like I do not think Jordan Walker is going to be as bad at right field, first of all, as he's been this year. Second of all, if he is, he's not gonna play right field anymore.
I was gonna say he could just move in.
If
but it is interesting that every other name on this list, his projections are not as good, especially because like Nolan Gorman, who was an honorable mention last year, is an honorable mention again this year, and did have a really, really great start to the season, and then cooled off a bit, but like, you know, kind of at the beginning of the season was like the guy who we expected him to be, you know, a true number three hitter. They just don't let him hit against lefties, which is something that I hate. But like
personally,
I gotta learn to hit against lefties if you don't hit against lefties, you know. Yeah. Anyway,
I just think Bryson Stott already being worth 2.4 F4 in his second season, not being here,
and that's
just
something.
It's a little wild to me.
Like you mentioned, Jackson Holliday, who is an honorable mention, and Stott is not even on. That I agree. Stott, I think, has been too good to not at least be an honorable mention.
He's definitely worth a mention.
Lars
Nootbaar is on here. I think he's someone that. I love the vibes. Don't think he's like a valuable trade guy. I just don't. I view him as maybe like a league average player, and I just don't think that's.
I think a league average player is a valuable trade guy, though.
Like, but I think like I'd rather have Bryson Stott like in a heartbeat than Lars Nootbaar. You know, I think Lars Nootbaar is an interesting guy to get back in a trade. I don't think he's leading any big trade offer or, you know, whatever like that. Naim, was there any others that jumped out to you before I get into the Jackson Holliday rant?
I will say, before I get into Jackson Holliday rant, Jackson Holliday also an honorable mention.
Yes, he is. He was a late cut, and we can maybe fit him into like 51 because I think he was kind of similarly than James Wood. But I have thoughts on that.
I don't think I have any other like crazy thoughts. You know, cool to see Randy Arozarena jump to 34. No other specific thing. So you can do your Jackson Holliday right now.
I think one more thing I would mention is that, you know, there's no zero of the mega contract guys are on here, right? There are guys with extensions like Luis Castillo just signed an extension and he's been amazing. So he's still on here, you know, because he might have signed a little under market value. Jose Ramirez, obviously. Logan Webb signed a really reasonable contract, and then all the Braves that did that. But none of the mega contract guys are on this list.
How much money Harper on this list is being donated to the Braves Foundation?
A lot. Many millions.
I do actually, it is interesting that we talked much about Ohtani on this list. Ohtani is the only person with zero team control on this list.
Yeah, only rental. Yeah. I think he's probably the only rental that will ever be on this list.
Soto probably will be, you know, like because he's
maybe
so young.
Could squint at it, yeah.
I think Soto could squeeze away on this list.
You know,
right.
He'd be like, Ohtani, just like throw him in at the end. There's Ohtani's like, rental. Did he gain trade value from last year? Maybe. The one guy that I might include from the mega contract guys is Mookie Betts.
Sure.
You know, there's no Mike Trout, there's no Bryce Harper, there's no Manny Machado. Mookie has been playing so well. He's, you know, obviously his defensive stuff has taken a hit because he's been playing like second base and shortstop. I don't really hold that against him necessarily, right? Like, I think that's just nice for him to be able to breathe a little bit and not have to worry about right field all the time, and then be able to help out when they need it because they've really needed help in those spots. But the bat is, he's just so good, you know, and he's just been like, it doesn't seem like he's really slowing down. And at the same token, I think I'd have Freddie Freeman in there too. He's not a mega contract guy, but like, you wouldn't take.
And for what it's worth, again, in the honorable mention page, like, they're listed under great players with big contracts,
right?
Mookie and Trout and Olsen and Freeman and Arenado.
But
and,
you're like, I
do agree, because like, Mookie going from 24th with the contract he already had,
yeah,
to off the list is like, I don't think that is a little confusing to me, because it's not like he's gotten better. He's got the same contract. He's a year older, but like, from 24th to off the list feels like a little bit of a crazy
and
jump.
Like, this is the kind of exercise where you can actually compare player A to player B because of the rankings, right? And you're telling me with a straight face that you wouldn't trade 2 years of Cedric Mullins for the next 3 or 4 years of Freddie Freeman, right? It's like, obviously you pick Freddie Freeman. You know, it's just like not even close. You know, maybe you can say Mookie's too expensive, but you know, 3+ more years of Freddie Freeman, I think, trumps a handful of these guys. And then I think the most controversial one,
and again, Mookie has a big contract, but it's a big contract for the next like 8 years.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like,
I get it, but I would still have those two guys. And then the one that I think drew the most reaction from myself and maybe the people that we talk to frequently is Alejandro Kirk landing at 39 amid a very middling year. Obviously, he was really good last year. He's super young. I think he's still 24 years old, but has really not shown it on any part of the game other than just like making weak contact, you know, this year. I think he's one of the guys we know has more skill than what he's shown this year, but I just don't know if he's like a real catcher, and I don't know if he's a real hitter either, you know? So it's like, it's just not a guy. Again, would you rather have 3 years of Alejandro Kirk or 3 years of Freddie Freeman? It's not particularly close to me, and one of them is ranked and one of them is not, you know? So I, you know, he's one that I get it. I get the logic, but I think I would have been more aggressive and just said, let's put him at honorable mention for now. Or like 50th, maybe, until we have a more firm idea of what this guy really is, because I don't think we really do yet. So that was one that I jumped out to.
I do want to mention the list of names that were on the list last year and are not on the list this year, under the departing the list, not an honorable mention, which are Shane Bieber, Freddie Peralta, Brandon Woodruff, Max Fried, Luis Garcia, Ty France, and Dylan Carlson. Mostly guys who have had like not like pretty disappointing seasons this year, or like,
or
you know,
running out of time.
Running out of time, or like, we're kind of fringe. Like, you know, Carlson was 49th last year. Like, I don't think he's any worse this year. I don't think he's any better this year.
But he hasn't taken a leap.
He hasn't taken a leap. He's a
two-win
guy, and he was 49th on the list last year. It doesn't make sense to be on the list this year. Totally. Yeah, it makes perfect sense. So, like, guys like that who are like, but yeah, like Fried, who like was, you know, elite last year and has been.
He's just been hurt.
Yeah.
And he's got a year after this, you know? So it's just like, I think you might be able to justify him being toward the back, but it's not really worth thinking about since he's
like
just coming. I think he's coming back next week.
And but Shane Bieber especially, who's been like fine, you know.
Yeah, he's been an interesting case.
Freddie Peralta, fine.
Bieber's underlying stats are about as concerning as can be, so he might be in his own category there. So this is my Jackson Holliday thing. Jackson Holliday is not mentioned on here. He's an honorable mention, you know. I think Jackson Holliday should be at least top 30. So the fact that he is not top 50 confuses me greatly. And here's, I'm going to lay out kind of the case, right? So Jackson Holliday was the number one pick of this last year's draft, right? It wasn't really clear.
Paul
Skeens,
by the way,
one.
Is also an honorable mention on this list. So
yeah, Skeens, yeah, for sure. But you know, he hasn't even played yet, so yeah. I'm fine. I'm fine putting guys that haven't played. Right, this isn't sure, a number one pick thing necessarily.
Yeah.
Jackson was drafted number one. There was kind of some question of who was going to go number one last year. I don't know if y'all followed the draft that closely, but you know, Drew Jones was a really hyped prospect. Obviously, Andrew Jones' son, really talented. He got drafted second. And has been hurt basically all this year. He's not on the radar as far as like these types of guys. You know, he's still a good prospect, but you know, is stalled out right now basically in rookie ball or A ball, wherever he is. Jackson Holliday was taken number one and has just shredded everywhere he's been.
Yeah.
Since the second he put on an Orioles hat. Like he has, even in short season, throughout this entire season, he's 19 years old and he's in Double A, and he's like, you know, he was hitting like 400 in the lower levels in the minors, right? And this is as, if not the youngest player, one of the youngest players at all the levels he's been. It's like him and Jackson Churia, which, you know, I think Jackson Churia might deserve a spot around here too. But he has shown like preternatural hitting ability as a 19-year-old. You know, I know it's still double, you know, he's 10 games in his Double A career. He just hit a home run, I think, yesterday. I get it. I totally get it. This guy has shown, like, I think he's Corey Seager. Like, I think he's like that kind of guy, you know?
I agree.
I 100%. Think for him to not be your number one prospect is not a lack of belief in him, but it's more just like, you think Jackson Churio has a higher upside, which is, or James Wood maybe has a higher upside. I don't think anyone's ranked James Wood number one. So if this guy is like, if not a slam dunk number one prospect, then like almost a slam dunk, like a layup, you know, and he compares favorably to all of the other guys in this kind of like uber prospect like tier, right? Like, let's think of the other names on this list who have been like elite hitting, high skill and performance in the minor leagues over the past few years, right? So, like, let's say the last 2 years. Julio Rodriguez, Corbin Carroll, Adley Rutschman, Ellie De La Cruz, Gunnar Henderson. Where are they on this list? 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. Right? These are the most comparable guys as far as just destroying the minors at young age or experience in, like, Adley's case, right? Because he's only been in the minors for so long. And
I will say, for what it's worth, most of the guys you mentioned were also not on the list last year.
Right. But I think this is kind of my point, is where it's like, we need to be thinking a lot harder about these prospects. And like, these guys are clearly a cut above. We consider them a cut above, right? Like, there's like a line of demarcation, right? Where even when it gets to like fifth in prospect rankings, right? We're like, well, this guy's really good, but we're not sure if he's a guy. We're not comfortable putting him number one, you know? Whereas like guys like even Yuri Perez would be like, that's a number one pro. Like, that guy could be a number one prospect, and he lands 18th here after being honorable mention. But the idea that a guy could come up, let's say Jackson Holliday makes his debut next year. So he makes his debut at 20, and he starts off his career as a solid shortstop and blossoms into a star. Like, which seems like low end, you know, it just doesn't, like, when you take that type of production, that type of talent, it's just, it's not going to not work out unless he gets like hurt, you know, so it's going to be something. Right. You know, even if he doesn't have maybe as much power as like a Corey Seager, like, he's going to hit the crap out of the ball and play shortstop. And I think the idea that you'd be like, I'm not sure if I'd rather have him or Cedric Mullins long term, is just like absurd, you know?
So I'll say one thing, you know, as Clemens advocate here.
Yeah.
And by the way, this is not a Ben Clemens like.
No,
you
for
know,
sure.
It's a thankless job, and this is just my take on it, and this is more of a philosophical thing.
Yeah. I'll just say so because I think philosophically, what it seems to me is that, and I'm sure like if you made this argument to Clemens, he'd be like, yeah, I feel you. I think that makes. I don't think he disagreed with the word you just said, right? Like, I think he would agree with everything you said. Well, what one thing he says specifically in the James Wood blurb, because I think that's sort of the most important sort of
parallel
part of this discussion. What he says here is. I look at my past work every year to try to identify holes in the process. I've constantly left out players who haven't yet debuted in the majors. That's for a good reason. I don't think they're totally in keeping with the spirit of this exercise. Valuations differ wildly from team to team. The very best prospects generally get traded 4 stars, not as the highlight of a deal in their own right. And then Meg suggested Wood. And he says, for the most part, this list is about trading for players who are going to help your team now and in the future, with both sides being important. It's still about that. You're not going to see 18-year-old prospect in the low minors on here, no matter how big the hype gets. But Wood has a spectacular combination of talent and proximity to the majors that makes him fit the general concept of these rankings enough that I'm throwing him here on as a signpost.
Gotcha.
And then, you know, a couple other things. So I think the idea with Wood is that Wood, you know, Holiday, very good chance that Holiday debuts next year at 20, right? I think better chance that Wood debuts next year at 21. Just because of their age and their, you know, like Jackson Holiday has played 8 games at Double A.
True.
You know, like it is. I get why it's tough to again when I think Clemens' idea of this column. And he's the one who writes it, so it's his column. But Clemens' idea of this column is like these are the headliners in a trade at the deadline, and it's hard. Like it's hard to imagine a team trading for Jackson Holiday as the headliner of a trade, as opposed to as the headliner of the other direction, right? Yeah. Like if the Orioles trade for Ronald Acuna Jr., then Jackson Holiday goes in that side of the trade, right? Obviously, that trade would never happen. But talking about that hypothetical trade.
I think it's just a philosophical difference of how I would handle something like this, because those are the exact kinds of things that I'm kind of curious about as much as anything, right? Like Bobby Witt and Jeremy Pena aren't being traded for each other either, right? Like, you know, lots of these guys aren't being traded at all. Right, like Acuna's not being traded at all. Franco's not being traded.
The idea is if Bobby Witt is traded, right, by the Royals, what the Royals are getting back is a bunch of prospects who will hit the majors in a couple of years and be the future, whereas Bobby Witt is the present and the future.
I guess just my the other side of that case is that I'm as curious about both sides of that equation as just what is my star getting back in a trade. Like I'm curious what, like, if the, you know, Orioles wanted to trade the number one prospect in baseball, what level would you say no? You know?
Yeah.
Like, and it would get really high on, like, dangerously high on this list. Like, if gun to my head, if you told me would I rather have like Michael Harris or Jackson Holiday, I would think really hard about it. That's even with Michael Harris's crazy contract. Yeah. I understand.
Holiday. Like I think I would say I'd rather have Jackson Holiday. So, I see where you're coming from.
Like,
right? For sure.
Harris is 15th. So I understand.
Absolutely.
Like in theory, what he's saying. I do think there are certain circumstances here where I think we can take a couple prospects every year. Let's say that like split between like the 60 and 65 guys, right? Like, because the 60s tend to dominate. This is future value. So this is, you know, like more nerd talk. But say like a 60 future value guy.
It's all nerd talk.
Are typically the guys that dominate the top 10s and top 15s of a, you know, of a trade value or a prospect list. But then you get like a couple guys at the top almost every year that tread into 65, 70. Like Acuna and Otani were like 70s. Franco is a 70. You know, Witt and Julio and Adley, I think, were 65s. You know, like they were very clearly one notch above everyone else as far as the pure talent and production they had in the minors. And I think if we had Holiday, Churio, and Wood on this list, I wouldn't, and it doesn't really matter how high they would be, but I think they separate from the pack enough where we're going to look silly next year when the same column comes out. Jackson Holliday is 18th, James Wood is 25th, and Jackson Churio is 37th. And we weren't even talking about them, you know, the year before, despite the fact we knew if they weren't going to be immediately great, they're going to be immediately valuable. You know, so I think that's just the case. Right. And like I said, this isn't an anti-Ben Clemens thing. He gets a lot of crap for this, and it's a very thankless job. Yeah, yeah. I think he does a pretty good job with it. I think especially in the top 20, maybe 30, I really like the thought process. And once it gets past that, it's just really hard, you know. But I think just the theory behind it, I would like to be aggressive with the guys that are elite trade assets and not just really good ones, you know. That's the case. So,
yep.
Yeah.
All fair. And like I said, I think if you laid out all those arguments to Ben Clemens, they'd be like,
yeah,
you have a point, you know. Like, I think if you wrote for FanGraphs right now and we're having this conversation with Ben Clemens on the FanGraphs Slack, he would be like, hey man, I agree.
For sure, but I also didn't do it.
Exactly.
So my top 50 will be on the Spotify description.
Yeah, for sure.
Get your reading glasses ready.
Yeah. If Spotify allows for that, it's for that does long Spotify of a description. For tables, yeah.
He's a 10,000 word column at the end.
I'm changing the damn industry.
with all of that, unless Pat, you had any final thoughts on the trade value column?
No, just my irrational hatred towards Bryson Stott not even being an honorable mention, but that's really no, it.
I mean, I agree. Bryson Stott should at least be in the honorable mentions. I'm surprised 100%. That he's not. And like, he's not even in I'm skeptical, but I could be skeptical, but I could be convinced, right? Like, he's not anywhere. He's not even on I love your trade value, but I'm not in love with your trade value. He's not anywhere on this list. It's like, I do feel like he's just an oversight. I think it's just an oversight.
The other minor criticism, just that fits in with that, is that maybe it's a confusing level of like we're either not caring that much about current results or we care too much about current results. Like the fact that Bryson isn't on here having a really good season, but Matt McLean's been up for like 4 weeks and is like, or you know, he's been up for 2 months.
Stott wasn't a highly ranked prospect. Stott was in the top 100.
Yeah, but like Matt McLean is like above a lot of these other shortstops and stuff. Like, if you think Matt McLean has higher trade value across the league than Bobby Witt, I would really, really disagree. Like, I think that is just, I just don't think that Matt McLean has improved his stock so much within 2 months that he's ahead of the five tool guy that's still kind of figuring it out a little bit. You know, I'd still rather have Bobby Witt because the upside is crazy, and Matt McLean's running like a 400 BABIP to have a great start. He's having a great start, and I don't want to take that away from him. But
and his zips is insane, you know. Like
the zips is probably doing a lot of heavy lifting here. But like, I do not think Matt McLean is like a perennial all star.
I agree with that. Right. Yeah. And also, like, you know, again, looking at this honorable mention list, like Josh Lowe's on here, which is fine. I think Josh Lowe is perfectly reasonable to be on here. But like, would you rather have Josh Lowe or Bryson Stott? It's pretty even for me. Yeah. You know, like, so I get it.
Yeah.
And Stott plays a more premium position, so I'd probably rather have Stott.
Yeah, it's true.
Like if we're talking a vacuum, you know. Cool. Well, that's the trade value stuff. It's time now to put those trade values to work.
Yes.
And talk about some hypothetical trade deadline trades. So Dylan and Pat have both made up 4 trades each. I have not heard any of them, and they have not heard of either's.
I have a special 5th trade just for Dylan, which I'll actually lead off with when we get started.
Oh, look at that. All right. So,
go ahead.
Pat, why don't you start off with that then?
All right. So I wanted to have all 3 of our teams covered. So I didn't have one for the Braves, but when you mentioned what the Braves need, I came up with something. You're going to love this. The Chicago Cubs get Vaughn Grissom. The Braves get Drew Smyly and Cody Bellinger.
Oh, whoa. That's really weird.
So
what would
fits that outfield need you were talking about.
Uh-huh.
So you get a premium defender in left. And right. then you get Drew Smyly to slot in.
Back-end starter,
yeah.
sure.
Just a back-end guy. Yeah, because I mentioned to Pat that, you know, the Braves just need arms. Like, it's not really a... They're not going to go out big game fishing. They've already done that when they got Murphy and stuff before the season. They tend to do that in the middle, you know, in off seasons anyway. So they just need, like, probably one more veteran arm in the bullpen or in the rotation, which Smyly definitely qualifies right for both of those. The Bellinger thing is so interesting because the Braves are in, like, a really interesting spot because they have multiple guys that kind of throw into left field right now. Eddie Rosario is kind of the primary guy. He's kind of platooning with Kevin Pillar. Ozuna's mainly the DH, but he kind of shares time with Darnell on that end. But yeah, you can definitely make the case for Bellinger as, like, you know, taking over as kind of the primary guy against righties, playing stellar defense. Maybe he can give Ronald a day off every once in a while, or Harris a day off. It's a really interesting idea, and frankly, I think I would probably do it because I don't think Grissom has, like, that much of a future with the Braves. Yeah. I think he probably outperforms those guys as rentals, right? Like, I think I might
100%.
If I think I'd rather have someone with maybe another year or two of control if I'm giving up Grissom.
Well, Smiley's got a player option, so.
Well, I guess he's back then. But, you know, maybe he, I mean, you know, it costs a lot to get a veteran pitcher. Maybe he still opts out, but.
Bellinger, by the way, has a mutual option, which he's, you know,
mutual
he's
options,
had and not going to take.
He's like, yeah, don't bother. So, yeah, I think that is really interesting. I'm on the fence. I'd probably lean toward yes. But I just don't know if Bellinger is the type of guy that I would be looking for, because there could be a universe where he's just not as good of a hitter as Eddie Rosario. You know what I mean? Like, Bellinger's just not
100%
a guy that you want to rely on. But he's been really good. Like, you know, it's not like there's nothing wrong with what he's done.
He's definitely getting moved, right? Like, whether or not it's to the Braves, Bellinger's not a Cub in 2 weeks.
We have a friend of ours who's a big Cubs fan, and I think today he was like, we should just extend Cody Bellinger because I love him and we should not trade him. And I'm like,
yeah,
I could definitely see it. You know, it is worth noting. I mean, he has a 143 WRC plus. So it's like, wow, he's really fixed everything. He's like way outperforming, you know, his peripherals. Like, the difference between his ex WOBA and WOBA is gigantic, you know? So I don't know how great he really is. I do trust him as a runner. I do trust him as a fielder. And I think he's a streaky but valuable hitter. I just, you know, it's a tricky one, but I will tentatively say yes if I were the Braves to that. But I would be curious to see what Grissom's value is across the league, because I think certain teams might value what he brings more than others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like, the Red Sox, for example, could certainly use Von Grissom.
I think, yeah. Like, I think, especially if you're another team, we're like, we think we could figure out his position better. Just the Braves, like, where are the Braves going to put him? You know, like, if he can't play shortstop, he's not really playing anywhere else.
Well, yeah, the Cubs, I mean, yeah, like, and yeah, and the Cubs already have the guy who was blocking Von Grissom a year ago.
That's a good point.
Dansby Swanson. And
well,
then
at least,
like,
they could move Horner to third or play Grissom at third, you know, like,
yeah,
at least, like
there's a little bit of flexibility
outside,
right?
Of shortstop, yeah. You know, like, yeah, they're just not,
and
Horner
can play like
flexible
outfield, like, yeah, they have flexibility, but
so,
I don't know,
it's maybe there are better fits for Bellinger or Vaughn, but I think you're in the right kind of wheelhouse of what the Braves might be looking for. Yeah.
Which, for us, what they already have Christopher Morel, like, DHing, and he's also, like, a capable second baseman.
Right. Yeah, like third baseman.
They
kind of
have a lot of middle infielders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm assuming, Pat, you have an Ohtani trade somewhere, right? Do we want to save?
I'd save an Ohtani for last. Yeah.
Okay. We each have one Ohtani trade that are very different. We haven't traded what they are, but they're very fundamentally different. So I'll wait on that. This one is more, we're starting off simple ish, you know, like I think that was a good starter for Pat. So this is the Reds making a move to try to win the division. So they're them trying to add to their team now, just say, hey, we need pitching desperately. And I think if you see what their rotation looks like, you know, if they add one really good starter and stop playing, who's the guy that's won like 10 straight starts with like a 7 ERA?
Luke Weaver. No, Luke Weaver.
Yeah, Luke Weaver.
Cardinals legend.
Like, yep. He sucks so bad. They just keep winning because their offense is so good. So I have them trading with the New York Mets.
Luke Weaver, I think, was the number two guy in the Paul Goldschmidt trade.
God, that sucks so bad. Don't. Yeah. We'll talk about the Cardinals later. So this is in the scenario in which the Reds are buying and the Mets are selling, which
I love,
you know,
it.
Like, is this likely to happen either way?
The world we live in?
It brings a smile to my face.
I am not sure, but it's a theory, and I like the guys kind of involved here. And the primary guy involved is Max Scherzer, who would be going to the Reds.
Oh my God.
Max Scherzer would lead the Reds playoff push with Andrew Abbott at the top of the rotation. The Reds would also get Tommy Pham in this deal. Tommy's not really a crucial part of it, but I think it gives them just another bat. And I've kind of like
legend Tommy Pham.
Yeah. And they, you know, they like, he's played there before, right? Like we mentioned, I think, right? He's played there, right?
Yeah, last year.
And they've kind of used their DH spot like a rotation, right? Like Votto will play there, Christian Encarnacion Strand can play there, Spencer Steer can play there. It just gives them another guy that they can rotate throughout left field, DH, whatever they want to do, right? And he's very capable and he's good. And I think Scherzer has a player option next year. He's owed a lot of money. So I put like cash question mark because they'd probably need to get some cash back, especially considering the way the Reds operate.
That's the big thing I think there is, right? Like that's how much cash is going the other way in that deal. Yeah. For I think it's tough, right? Because I think the Mets think they'll be good next year.
Yeah. I have the Mets receiving Nick Senzel, who is having a decent year, but I think is generally like a meh utility guy. But you know, it's still a former first round pick that the Mets can maybe, you know, fit into the rest of their plans this year and see what they got. And then Connor Phillips, who is, I believe, the minor league strikeout leader somewhere in that wheelhouse. He is one of the premier strikeout pitchers in minor league baseball this year. I believe he's in Double A. So a high upside kind of arm getting into their system. Because of the money Max is owed, it's tough, like saying, like, oh, he's going to get back a crap ton of prospects and stuff. Sorry, cats are fighting. And you know, the Reds probably wouldn't want to, you know, go crazy anyway. So you kind of have to come out with a medium kind of offer where it's like these guys are enticing, but not like, you know, it's not going to be like the Scherzer Turner trade of years ago. So yeah, let me know what y'all think of that possibility outside of how weird.
Connor Phillips, by the way, has a 14.6 strikeouts per nine in between Double A and Triple A this year.
He is,
and 13.3 for like the, you know, the other 2 years in the minors.
He
which is
like certified, like, you know, like maybe he's an ex-Spencer Strider. I know it's like not like likely, but like,
was he part of the Castillo, you know, trade?
I think he's been there the entire time. I can check that.
He started with Seattle, so I think I'd assume it's the Castillo trade.
Let me see. Yeah, it looks like he might have been. I just didn't know. You know, he walks a lot of dudes, but I think he is a very fun guy that you could land that, you know, and I think Max Scherzer's player option kind of prevents going crazier than that. But let me know what y'all think about those guys.
I like it. I like it a lot. I think that's a solid trade.
It's certainly interesting. I think the Scherzer of it all is what makes it really tough.
It's hard thinking of the Mets doing, like, I think the teams involved are the worst, like as far as like the realism of it all, right? Like the Reds willingly taking a crap ton of money and the Mets throwing in the towel, maybe not throwing in the towel, but being like, well, we can try again next year, you know, is definitely the most unrealistic part of it. But I think as far as a value proposition, it's an interesting one because, you know, what if Max Scherzer just leaves? You know, what if he rejects his team option? Because he's been really good the last like, couple months. He started out the season really poorly and has gotten a lot better. He's looked like Max Scherzer, you know.
Yeah.
So I would be very curious what is the outlook for him like as a trade chip.
By the way, Phillips was the player to be named later in the Jesse Winker, Eugenio Suarez trade.
Oh, wow. Yeah. What a deal for them.
So it was Suarez and Winker for Justin Dunn, Jake Fraley, Brandon Williamson, and a player to be named later, the player being Connor Phillips.
Because that trade looked pretty brutal for them for a year or so. And then Fraley's worked out pretty well, and now Connor Phillips looks to be maybe the jewel of the trade, which is very curious. Good long-term.
Phillips had similar numbers in 2021, but he was like, that was his first year in the minors. I think they probably wanted him to be this guy, and this is the guy he is becoming. So it's interesting.
I think you could fit Scherzer onto any team that needs a starting pitcher. I think you could even think of like the freaking Cardinals if you wanted to. It's just a matter of, I think the Reds are the team that are the best team that have the least pitching, and I think that's just a natural fit as far as need. So that's why I decided to go.
Yeah, I just like, for me, I feel like Max Scherzer says, no, I'm not playing in Cincinnati. And then it doesn't happen,
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting.
That's the thing about it. Everything about the Scherzer of me is like, I don't feel like, in my head, I don't picture Max Scherzer as a Cincinnati Red. And then it just all falls apart there in my head.
That's true. I just don't know. Yeah,
I certainly get why it works.
Yeah, I just don't know what the perception shift is going to be and how long that takes for the Reds. Where are they actually going to be like a super trendy team in the next couple of years as far as free agents being like, oh, wow, I can get in on that, So yeah, maybe that changes, maybe it doesn't. But I think it's an interesting thought.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I like it. Okay.
Pat, what's your next
trade? So this one was weird to come up with, and it was mainly just figuring out the prospects. But it's a three-team trade. So it has the Dodgers getting Marcus Stroman from the Cubs and David Bednar from the Pirates.
Oh, wow. Jeez. Okay.
It has the Cubs are going to get Andy Pages. I think that's how you say his name. And Maddox Bruns, and the Pirates would get Matt Mervis.
Okay.
It was a little weird trying to figure out the prospect thing, because in reality, it's like, so it's Bruns for Bednar, and it's Pages for Stroman, but the Pirates would flip Bruns to the Cubs and get some hitting prospects back. So I had Mervis down as the guy.
Okay. I think my first reaction is, wow, the Pirates need to get more for Bednar than that.
Yeah.
Because he is, like, still multiple years of control, right? I think he's still got, like, 3 years, 4 years, something like that, because he's still pretty young, relatively speaking.
Well, so the other idea was they would get, what's the second baseman from the Dodgers? Bush. They would get Bush and then flip Bruns.
Bednar, by the way, is a free agent in 2027.
Okay, yeah, so
we're gonna add Bush to this trade, and the Pirates will flip Maddox to the Cubs for Mervis.
So they would get Mervis and Bush.
Yeah,
Cubs would get
Pages and
Bruns.
Yep,
Bruns
and the Dodgers get Stroman and Bednar. Because if you look at the Dodgers rotation, it is injured to hell.
Yeah, the Dodgers need a lot of help, and I have a three-team trade involving them as well, just because it's funny. I think I definitely get all the pieces. I think I'd still want more from the Pirates. I think they might just be like, hey,
I'm
guys,
considering
y'all should,
the,
maybe
the
y'all
Ben
should
Cherington
deal.
Factor here.
I think the Ben Cherington factor would be like, give us four prospects who all aren't very good.
Then they're getting River Ryan back in this too.
Just give us four guys you don't really care about, which is like the Guardians Pirates way. Like, you guys don't have to do anything that hurts. Just give us stuff. And hopefully it works out.
maybe one of them will hit.
Maybe one of them will be a two war player.
Someone will.
But if I'm, relievers are not worth what they used to be, because like we have the Aroldis Chapman trade and Andrew Miller trades of the past, where it's like, holy crap, these guys are getting back elite prospects. That's probably not going to happen again, at least not on short term players. But David Bednar's so far away from free agency, and he's been so good. You basically, as the Pirates, you shouldn't get rid of them unless you have a really, really good reason to. And I think I think he deserves at least one like blue chip guy. And Bush is that guy to some people. That's where Bush would come in. Like, I just don't. I'm so confused on what he is.
I don't think the Dodgers would do Cartaya.
But Cartaya has been really bad this year. So it's like, it's confusing. Like, he's been like, he's sinking fast. And he's getting
maybe
passed.
They do rushing, but I don't know. Yeah,
maybe rushing would satisfy.
I could see rushing going
he's
back.
He's probably like
that.
A top 25, 30 guy now, I think, on some of the midseason lists.
But then the Dodgers or not the Pirates are so deep in catcher now because they've got Davis.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Andy.
Like, you know, adding a third long term catcher is probably just not that valuable for them. So, I think I would rather restrict that to just the Dodgers trying to get Marcus Stroman and then like some reliever from the Cubs at the same time, as opposed to, or maybe just get Bellinger, you know, something like that. That'll be really funny. And then the Pirates holding on to Bednar until they got something better would be my impression of that trade.
Yeah, like the Cubs have like Alzolé, right? Yeah. Like, they don't need
him. They have him. He's a player.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's been closing for them recently. He's been closing
for them, and he's got the same sort of control as Bednar. Like, that's the guy he is, you know? Like,
so maybe you can justify, maybe if you give Bush up for him, or, you know, I don't know if you'd want to do that, but you know what I mean? Like, I think maybe that would work better. Yeah. All right. I will do my version of the Dodgers, and this includes.
It's great.
This includes.
None of these are on a list.
Yeah.
They just have their own list.
Yep.
So it's great that they're lining up perfectly like this.
This includes the Los Angeles Dodgers. So the primary goal of this trade is the Dodgers adding at key places where they need a lot of help, right? Because the Dodgers are a really good team, but like. They're kind of really they're weirdly thin at a lot of places because of injuries. It includes the Guardians and it includes the Cardinals.
Ooh, okay.
So, Naim, which team do you want me to start with first?
Start with the Guardians. It'll be more fun, you know.
Guardians will receive Dylan Carlson, which we've discussed before. Kind of would make sense to trade chip. Tyler O'Neill, kind of same deal, running out of time. You know, unsure of if he has a place to go, whatever. And Michael Bush. Another really good hitter, like as we discussed from the Dodgers farm system that the Dodgers basically can't use. Let's do the Dodgers next and we'll save the Cardinals for third.
Sure.
Dodgers receive Tommy Edman. So Edman would play shortstop for them. Jordan Montgomery, Jordan Hicks, James Karinchak, and Shane Bieber. Jordan Montgomery rental, like three, four guy. Jordan Hicks, I think is a rental reliever. Is that right?
Yeah.
James Karinchak. He might
have another year, but he's.
James Karinchak was once a heralded high level reliever who has kind of fallen out of favor either because of his own idiocy or whatever that the Dodgers could maybe work on, you know. Give them more depth in their bullpen short-term and long-term. And Shane Bieber is currently hurt, but has an extra year after this. He has been really struggling as far as his back-end stuff, as we mentioned before, but it's still Shane Bieber. Like maybe the Dodgers can figure something out. At worst, he can go 5-6 innings at a time and just kind of get through, you know, these innings that they've been given to Michael Grove or some, you know, person like that. And then And then the Cardinals receive Diego Cartaya from the Dodgers, Gavin Stone from the Dodgers, Ahmed Rosario, and Miles Straw from the Guardians. So the Cardinals receive one of those two catchers we just mentioned from the Dodgers prospect farm system. Gavin Stone, who is probably considered the best pitcher in the non-Bobby Miller division at the Dodgers would have to offer, and then they take Ahmed Rosario because they could just throw him wherever, and the Guardians probably hate that guy by now. And Miles Straw, who can just fill in the gaps at center, would give them good defensive value even if he doesn't hit very well. Thoughts?
I like it.
I don't think it makes any sense for what the Cardinals have stated that they're going for, which is pitching. And Stone obviously is that, right? But like everything else, they're giving up a lot. And the only thing that they want in that, what they're receiving is Gavin Stone. Like other than that, it's like, here's like the worst guys we can give up, you know? Yeah. Like
it's trading a lot of guys. And I think Edmund is obviously the biggest piece here. I guess it's just, there's some, I think in my own formulation here, it's tough grading exactly how Edmund would be viewed in a trade, because obviously he's viewed as a pristine defender, but I think the bat has kind of just fallen out. Like he's really not been productive all season, and even last year is kind of like, it's kind of slipping a little bit. But you know, the Dodgers just need kind of maybe average, you know,
right,
shortstop help, and that kind of accomplishes that. And I don't think any of these guys that the Cardinals give up are like long term, like, oh, that's gonna kill us, you know? It's like, these are a bunch of guys that's like, you know, either
it feels like the Cardinals giving up four guys who they can give up for other people,
yeah,
and getting back one guy who they want,
yeah,
and three guys who they like don't care about.
I mentioned Cartaya, if I said he was included in this trade before this year, it'd be like, whoa, we're getting Diego Cartaya. Now it's like, oh, like he's just not been that good. But
yeah, and even then, right? Like Diego Cartaya is like, you know, Ivan Herrera insurance, right? Like, because like
that's a pretty brutal way to. Do you know who he is?
Maybe not at best. Maybe at best is a stretch.
Prospect entering the season.
Sure.
In all of baseball at premium.
Yeah, he was a child, you know, like in like single and double. Like it's tough for me to rank single and high A prospects that highly. Like I get it, you know, like, but like.
But it's also a real bite at the apple at the next great Cardinals catcher, which, you know, no matter what they're talking about now, is very clearly important in their minds about the current situation that they're dealing with. And you know, the skills that this guy has are extreme. You know, maybe you could replace rushing with him and you'd be, you know, I think he's more offensive profile. But yeah, so I do get that criticism for sure. I think part of this is that I don't really view Dylan Carlson as like a guy. I think Tommy Edmonds is the only guy that I view as like having like legitimately high or even, I wouldn't even say high. Like, I think Carlson and Edmund Butch have moderate trade value, and you're getting two guys who, if they're not that right now, I think Stone still is. If they're not elite prospects right now, they have been elite prospects within months of now. So,
that's the concept. I just don't see a trade where you're trading four guys for two elite prospects and two guys you don't care about, you know, like even if they don't have like high trade value, it's like, that's four major league guys for like two, you know, like if like Cartaya likely could be good, Stone likely could be good, but there's no lottery tickets, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, you know, you could reduce, you know, the prospects to that. And so that's definitely fair. I think this would make more sense than them trading for a veteran starter and then letting all these guys go into free agency. You know what I mean? So
yeah, well, I'm not sure they let all the guys go into free agency. Like I think Hicks certainly gets traded for something. Yeah. I think, you know, there's a good chance Carlson gets traded for something. Yeah. I'm not convinced Edmund's going anywhere, but I guess I could see it.
I would be very curious if this shows anything about how my brain's working on this. I think something's got to give, and I'm just curious to see what that's going to be. You know what I mean? If it's building or not building, I think at least a couple of these guys are getting moved. I'm very curious in what context those guys are getting moved. And I think that's Carlson, Hicks, O'Neill, that kind of group are kind of high on the list.
Yeah. I could certainly see those guys and Montgomery as well, who you mentioned, like getting moved, and what the deal is or what, you know, what happens. That's certainly up for question. But
and then the Guardians part of this is probably the most obvious part, where they move on from Shane Bieber and they'll always have another pitcher ready to go. But they get back Carlson, who's stable. Like I said, don't think is impressive, but stable. O'Neill, who could be a little bit of a juice offensively, could play some outfield, could play some DH. And Michael Bush, who they get from the Dodgers and could actually play. And then also they could move what's his name? Who's the second baseman there? I'm a blank on this dude's name. He was an all-star last year. Yeah.
Andrés Giménez.
Giménez, yeah. He can move the shortstop, I think, without any issue. And then you can play Bush at second base.
Which he should have done in the first
game. Exactly. Like,
there's no reason to play
Andrés. Guardians got to get rid of just DFA Amed Rosario. Like,
put
Jesus.
A paper bag at second base. It's better than having Amed Rosario at shortstop.
Like, Jesus Christ. Like, get this over with. You know, so that was part of my goal. Very weird. Too. So, but yeah, I think the biggest flag, red flag there is Cardinals' intent. You know, so I get what you mean.
All right, so this is another three teamer. I'm not feeling too great about it.
We love the three teamers,
honestly. So it involves the Cardinals. It involves.
So if you want to watch the baseball offseason sim,
oh yeah, we're in a live podcast.
Essentially, what this is.
It involves the Cardinals. It involves the Diamondbacks. It involves the Mets.
Oh
so
man,
which one do you want to hear first?
Is Paul Goldschmidt going to the Diamondbacks in this trade?
Okay, so let's
okay, do the Diamondbacks first.
The Diamondbacks get Paul Goldschmidt and Jordan Hicks from the Cardinals. And they also they also get Max Scherzer from the Mets.
Holy
By the way, this is already so far from reality, but let's go ahead and continue.
We're far from reality.
This is nuts,
The Cardinals will get Brandon Thatt, Jake McCarthy, and Blake Tidwell from the Mets.
Okay.
Tidwell is a pitching prospect that's been performing pretty well.
Yeah. And this is, you said the Mets? Or, I'm sorry, the Cardinals get
The Cardinals are getting this.
The Cardinals get Thatt, McCarthy. And Tidwell.
Okay.
And Tidwell.
The Mets get Blake Walston, Division De Los Santos, and Dylan Carlson.
Okay.
And the Mets are only sending Scherzer in this trade.
They are only sending Scherzer, correct. And they're sending, they're sending Tidwell to the Cardinals to get Carlson because they need an outfielder.
Oh, sure. Okay, yeah. You know, everything you said after what the Diamondbacks are receiving sounds like you made it. It certainly got less crazy when you said who's moving in the trade.
Yeah. I think if you removed Max Scherzer, I would be like, all right, this starts to balance. The Scherzer part just throws a giant wrench in it because he's so hard to value, you know? And then the idea that the Cardinals just like
you're sending him to the Reds. What are we talking about?
You know, but I'm just like it's not the team part of it. I don't know what he's gonna get in
the
trade.
Like I know the Cardinals are saying they're not gonna move Goldschmidt.
Yeah.
But like that is a good enough pitching prospect that they could get that they could do it.
Here's because the problem though.
After this year, there's only one year of control for Goldschmidt.
Yeah, I get that. I know Thatt has been a good pitching prospect. He has had such bad results in the majors, and
he's gotten really
rookie year, but like
stuff,
atrocious results so far.
And then Tidwell's a guy they could develop, and he's looked pretty solid in the Mets system.
Right.
But you're still giving up,
and Jake McCarthy.
You're still giving up Carlson in that, which like I just said that I don't think Carlson's that good. But like they're still giving up like one of the better assets in the trade while they're selling, you know? So I think if everything else is equal, I think they need another good prospect in that deal. I think they need a third guy.
So the Mets do have Ronnie Mauricio or Jet Williams that they could move.
Yeah,
probably Mauricio.
I think
he doesn't really have.
If there's some way for them to get
a pitcher. I just saw that Jake McCarthy's brother is named Joe McCarthy and that he played for the Rangers.
I know, how funny is that?
Oh, sorry, for the Giants, not for the Rangers. Yeah. He's with the Rangers right now. That's wild. Why would you name your child Joseph McCarthy? Anyway, sorry. Let's go ahead.
I don't know, you know, it's tricky because it's like, do the Diamondbacks or Mets have this guy? But if they could get another pitcher, I think, even if you maybe add like another guy or like, replace who is the second guy you mentioned coming from the Diamondbacks?
McCarthy.
Like, I just don't think he does anything because of the situation the Cardinals are in. I don't think Jake McCarthy is like, I think you're just kind of spinning your wheels at that point. I mean, he has more team control, but still.
Yeah, but he's kind of replacing.
He's just a fast
already is.
Center fielder. Like, it's whatever. So I would, if I'm the Cardinals and I'm like, screw it, I can't deal with this anymore. I think I'd rather just get more young pitchers back, because that's clearly what they want and need.
Zach Gallen to the Cardinals on this trade. just go all the way.
Let's make it just crazier. Go full ridiculous. Yeah.
Well, we got Scherzer going back to the Diamondbacks. So, you know.
As I'd say, just right, right. This is just exactly. Diamondbacks reunion tour. Yeah. Just
everybody getting, yeah. Just send Carson Kelly back to the Cardinals too. Why not?
Oh yeah, that's what this should have been. It's just a bunch of guys reuniting for no reason.
It's kind of what it already was.
I did not realize Goldschmidt had only a year after this. Is that true?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that is very interesting, because I think that I thought that he had a couple more left, even if it wasn't that long. But yeah, I don't think it's like. You know, totally.
Well, another thing too is because a big thing about like Goldschmidt, you know, like he does have the no trade clause.
Yeah.
I could see him waiving it for Arizona for like a reunion.
Like,
you
know,
like,
they're really good.
That I think is
the other problem, you know, though, is like where does he playing first and Christian Walker playing DH?
Yeah,
like
Walker's going to DH in that,
but like he's also really good. Like I hate the overplay first base defense, but like Walker is like a good first baseman. You know, so
I think it might be better.
Goldschmidt's a gold glove for his
baseline. Right, exactly.
You know,
but I'm saying, like, is it like.
So is Walker.
You're gaining a lot of offensive value. You're maybe, like, even on defense. You know, you maybe going backward on defense because you're moving a guy. You know, you're redundant, right? So it's like, it's not like a problem, but it's like you're having two first basemen on the team. It's kind of a strange fit.
I don't know. You can have them split.
Like I said, there's worse problems.
It gives their knees a little bit of rest, too. They're both over 30.
There's no problem with having. Too many good players, you know. So
yeah, exactly.
It's just,
exactly.
not a square into a square.
Remember when the Braves moved Freddie Freeman to third base so Matt Adams could play first?
What an era! Thank you, Freddie.
I forgot that was a thing. Thank you for that's my
favorite thing to ever happen ever.
Thank you, Rob Manfred, for giving us a DH, so we never had to see that again. He was.
Still could, you know. There's like who's isn't there like the Phillies have like four DHs on their team. What are we talking about?
All DH squad go Burr.
Nine. I can't believe you mentioned that, because next on my
list,
Philadelphia Phillies are up. That
I'm about to dox Dylan. I swear to God.
So the Phillies would like to contend. They have kind of a jumbled roster right now. Bryce playing first base helps, but the defense is tragic. They need a little bit more pitching, maybe, you know, just to get them over the finish line and maybe hedge a little bit in case Aaron Nola leaves, right? So they have some motives to grab a guy either for the next year, a couple years, whatever. So Phillies in this deal are working with the White Sox to receive Dylan Cease.
Ooh.
So that's their big deadline get. They'll have him for the next year and a half.
Okay.
That's not the only thing they're gonna get, but I'm gonna wait on that. So I'm gonna do this in kind of sections. The primary one to two here is Dylan Cease and Mick Abel going back to the White Sox. So good, you know, great pitcher coming back. I mean, you know, he hasn't been amazing this year, but obviously really talented pitcher. Would make the Phillies rotation obviously even better. It's already pretty good.
Wait, I'm sorry. Who were the guys going back to White Sox there?
Mick Abel is the first one I've revealed. There's two more players involved in this. There's one more player from each team involved, which makes it a lot funnier. The other players involved.
Abel's fine.
Are Yoan Moncada going to the Phillies and Kyle Schwarber going to the White Sox?
Nope, absolutely not. Nope. I'm done with this trade. Absolutely not. No, I don't.
I'm going to spell it out.
I don't want COVID Moncada on my team. Absolutely not.
So
I'm also wondering if like Schwarber is a good vibes fit, because he's a pure vibes guy, right?
Yeah.
Is he a good vibes fit on the White Sox?
Schwarber is a team leader on the Phillies. Oh.
Here's the deal.
Yes, he's a vibes guy. I agree.
Here's the deal. Moncada is owed $25 million next year. Clearly not worth it. He is struggling really bad, but can play some infield.
How much next year?
$25 million.
Yeah, stop.
But he has a team option in 2025, so you can basically.
Oh, I feel so great about the team option in 2025.
Kyle Schwarber.
Where's Moncada going to play?
Where's Kyle Schwarber playing right
DH,
now?
DH, what do you mean? You're getting rid of Schwarber. He's playing the same position Schwarber's playing.
The whole entire problem with the Phillies is that Kyle Schwarber is hogging up roster spots.
Isn't the Phillies' everyday third baseman Edmundo Sosa?
I'm sorry, it's Alec Bohm. Get it right?
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Yeah, because Bryce Harper is magically a first baseman now.
That's fair enough, fair enough. Alec Bohm's playing third.
What this accomplishes...
Bogum.
Just on the field, and we'll talk more about money. This accomplishes on the field, you obviously upgrade heavily in the rotation. You get a guy that can be like utility infielder. Maybe Johan recovers a little bit. Even if he doesn't, he's probably like a replacement level nobody, right? He'll play some second base for you if Bryson gets hurt or struggles. He can play some third base for you and when Edmundo Sosa leaves or Bohm can't play there or whatever. When Bryce needs to play DH.
Bohm already can't play there, but that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, this shifts around the pieces of the Phillies defense to allow them to like function like a real freaking team rather than this like DH amalgamation that they have going on right now. Kyle Schwarber, as bad as you think Moncada is, Kyle Schwarber has been worse demonstrably, no matter how you think, like, he's obviously got more upside. His defense is so bad. So bad. He's beyond unplayable in the outfield. And you have Bryce Harper, who needs to be playing DH.
If I may.
Yes.
We're going to have a guest here for a quick second because she's Schwarber's biggest fan. Hey, hon. How would you feel if the Phillies traded Kyle Schwarber for one of the best pitchers in baseball?
I'd be sad.
I would be sad too. Thank you. I
understand.
The vibes are immaculate.
Would launch Dombrowski out the window if he considered trading Schwarber, and it's not because, like, sure, you want to upgrade, but Schwarber brings something to the clubhouse that team needed.
Errors
that got them to the playoffs.
Does he bring them errors?
Sure, he brings them errors, but the Phillies do not get as far in the playoffs last year without Kyle Schwarber.
I understand that this year is much different.
Without the team vibes he brings.
Okay, the last piece of this, though, Kyle Schwarber's owed $20 million of each of the next 2 years.
Yes.
So in this trade, you pay a little bit more for Moncada, like barely more for Moncada next year, but you're saving $20 million in 2 years as you're paying Trey Turner and Bryce Harper, you know, lots of these guys, astronomical amounts of money, which could either help you retain Cease, retain Wheeler, retain Nola, any of these guys, because you'll have more money available in the future. So that's the case. I know it's if you're comfortable paying Kyle Schwarber $60 million to be a negative asset but bring fun vibes, that's your prerogative. But if I'm trying to win the World Series or get the second wild card slot, Kyle Schwarber does not fit on this team unless Bryce Harper is like magically
with
a great but like
now.
Is he going to be there
every
day?
Bryce Harper kind of is magically a great first baseman.
Okay. And like, here's the thing, Schwarber in the playoffs, dude, like,
I understand the value.
He's a playoff performer.
I understand the value, but like, he's just so bad at everything else, and he's just not been. Is Kyle Schwarber going to be the same guy he was last year? Are we pretending too much that he is the guy that he was? I don't know. So I knew it was going to agitate you, but that's why I thought it was kind of funny.
Yeah, I gotta find these stats on Schwarber as a leadoff hitter because
would you do Mick Abel for Dylan Cease?
Oh, 100%.
Okay, so that's like on in its own. I was going to do this exact same trade with Andrew Painter, which would have been just like a mind blown, like, what the hell do we do with this? Because he just had Tommy John surgery.
Literally.
He's a way better prospect. So it's like, this is just, you know, playing in like hyper, you know, hypotheticals. You know, but I think at the core of it, I think the Phillies could upgrade. And I think there's some room to switch around positions and stuff if they moved the right people. I think Schwarber would be the most rational. Do the Phillies probably do that? No. But I think
Schwarber's leadoff hitter, by the way, this year is hitting 192, 280, 440 with 67 strikeouts.
Dude, we got to keep that.
Well, hold on. Are you reading his overall stats right now or just the ones?
As a leadoff.
2023 as leadoff hitter.
Oh, God, I hate it. I hate it. Oh, man.
In June, he hit 223, but in July, he's hitting 187. Like, is that?
Well, that's
his home run every 4 days. It looks really fun. Well, yeah, Hoagie Fest isn't true. Coming back.
Listen, if the Phillies are going to run Hoagie Fest all season long, then maybe you, Kyle Schwarber's a valuable player, right? Like, I get, I guess. Like, Wawa's not going to run Hoagie Fest all year long. You know? Yeah, it's like,
if they bring Hoagie Fest back.
If I put my love for Kyle Schwarber aside, yes, I get it. Like, it's an upgrade, but God, I love Schwarber so much, it would hurt.
I understand. That's why I'm doing this.
To hurt me. I gave you Cody Bellinger to the Braves, and you hurt me like this.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Absolutely.
Like, I still hate the Phillies. Like, we're friends, but like...
I think I want the Phillies to be good. I mean, I think they would be...
Did you hear his Cardinals trade? Like, what are we talking about here?
My point is that to make the teams better, to make y'all hurt.
Because
if I don't get that out of it, then what the hell's the point?
Like, hey, what if the Cardinals give up 4 major league assets for like nothing they want? Like, that's a great
trade.
Bring
me Acuna's ACL. Okay. All right.
Are we in the Shohei Ohtani division yet, or we still got one more?
No, I have
one more. Right,
I've got my Phillies trade, and then we're doing okay. Shohei.
Yeah, Pat's got one more, and then we go Shohei.
It's your phrase.
Right. So the Phillies get Juan Soto and Josh Hader. The Padres get Andrew Painter, Mick Abel, Griff McGarry, Johan Rojas, Justin Crawford.
Holy crap!
They sell the farm for Soto, and then I imagine Dombrowski tries to go for that extension in the offseason.
Time out. Okay, I gotta start here. I just suggested a trade that says, guys, we can't have any more bad defense. Let's move Kyle Schwarber and kind of ease things up a little bit. And your trade is,
we need Juan Soto
on this team.
Hold on. Pat is full in on 9 DHs. That's fine. that's what the Phillies can do. Oh, Soto's fine.
He's certainly a lot better than Kyle Schwarber.
He's not Kyle Schwarber, but he's not fine. He's just not good at outfield.
He's acceptable.
No, he's not. Don't buy into that. He's not good.
I'm not saying he's good. I never said he's good.
My point is, like, he would not upgrade. The only upgrade defense is Kyle Schwarber.
Yeah, but he would upgrade defense because the person he's replacing is Kyle Schwarber. Right.
But, like, you could do that with literally anyone on earth. I understand.
That's true. You could put Ahmed Rosario in left field and get an upgrade, but it's still an upgrade.
Their defense would still be crap. So, sure. You know, that's part of the point.
Do you want to see defense or do you want to see him hit dingers, you know?
That being said, I don't hate the return. The return is really strong.
It kind of works.
So the Padres
Painter having Tommy John
prospects.
Surgery complicates it.
Yeah,
that's true.
They do have some interesting guys like Lesko, but he's just started basically because he just had Tommy John. Yeah. They had another guy that's like really popped up on lists recently, but I forgot his name. Like he's like a pop up guy that people really like a lot.
They lack pitching prospects, and Blake Snell's probably leaving. Yu Darvish isn't getting any younger, even though they gave him that stupid extension. And then, like, what do you have after? Like, okay, Joe Musgrove was good, but
yeah,
they lack that depth.
Yu Darvish, they're a confusing team. They don't have depth, and it's like,
honestly, the hardest one of these to trade for me was actually McGarry of the pitching process. So McGarry,
is the Phillies' entire farm system.
Is there
anyone there that like are they retaining
also,
anyone
like,
that they really love? Like I think that's all of them basically.
Like yeah, I mean,
outside of the guys. The question just is right, like down the road, right? Like they give up their whole farm system. Do they re-sign Soto?
Yeah,
do they have money for anybody? Yeah. Like Nola's gone, you know, like Wheeler's gone.
They
like
lose Wheeler.
Well, so here's the thing: when Soto hits free agency. They're going to be losing Wheeler off his contract. Schwarber will be a year away from free agency, so they could probably do a backloaded, like, you have the salary in the first year for Soto to be.
So they're gonna
what I'm saying is then they don't have a rotation.
Yeah, they don't have any pitchers, and then they have 3 hitters on their team that are making over $300 million.
Yeah, I get in the short term, like I totally get it.
Which like the Padres are basically doing, but the Padres, we admit, are reckless and crazy, and it's also not working.
Right.
I get it won't work with better players. I think back to the 08 Phillies one with just Cole Hamels and then the corpse of Jamie Moyer, Joe Blanton, and Brett Myers.
And so, but you're trading all those guys away. you're trading all the pitchers.
Well, no, so you have a rotation of, you have Ranger as your ace at this time. Ranger's developed very well.
He's fine. I like Ranger Suarez.
I love Ranger.
Is the ace of our staff. Is whoa.
Yeah, that's like the Cardinals coming into this year with Jordan Montgomery as the staff ace. It's like, hey,
Hudson's our ace.
He's fine. I like him, but like he's not the staff ace.
Bryce Elder is our staff ace of the future. Like that's how it feels. Where it's like, yeah, there's some interesting stuff going on there. I think Suarez is a step above that, but like, not. If he is your number one option, I fear for you.
Again, based on what I saw with the 08 team and how they really didn't have a pitching staff, but had that great bullpen.
Yeah,
I could see if they could piece it together. I could see, because Rollins, Utley, Howard, you know, here you have Harper, Soto.
What I'll say though is,
figures it out, Stott.
At the time, the Phillies were not really paying Howard, Utley, Rollins all that much money, so they went out the next year and like they got Cliff Lee, you know, and like that you can add things. You know, they had Pedro Martinez, right?
Like, here's the other thing. Like, ownership has made it clear. We don't really care for the luxury tax. We want another freaking trophy.
True. I mean, yeah. Like, obviously, I think my general impression of this trade
Middleton
is...
Middleton is even more motivated seeing how Cohen spends. I think that package
I think that package is good. I just don't love the fit. Because of the
reason. I do want to say 45-year-old Jerry Moore was like really good.
He was. I love Jerry Moore.
So fascinating. I think there is other teams that this would make more sense for than the Phillies, but obviously I understand you're trying to gas up the Phillies, and that's fine. And objectively, that would be a stupid lineup.
It would just be absurd.
But like, you know, what's the stupidest lineup right now? The Padres.
Like, are they? Yeah, it's confusing because the Padres should work and they don't.
And they just don't.
Yeah. But that's baseball, I guess. So yeah, I mean, I think the main thing you avoided though is like underselling, because you certainly did not. You know, hold back.
Soto
you know?
Will get a haul.
Yeah,
yeah.
He deserves
getting
it.
That home.
And you know, 1 year less from last year, I think what you offered is basically on point. You know,
yeah.
So, cool. All right.
Showtime.
Yeah. So Shohei, and ironically, I love the way this has worked out because I have Shohei Ohtani. As I mentioned before. My trade is very different than Pat's, and Pat's is going to make a lot more sense, but this is more of an open-ended exploration of the depths of the Shohei Ohtani trade. Padres receive Shohei Ohtani. So this is the Padres going just like, this is AJ Preller saying, screw it.
Oh, boy.
The Angels receive one player. It's Ethan Salas. The 17-year-old catcher.
Okay.
That is the entire trade. So.
I have questions.
Question away.
Hold on.
I have answers.
How does this work?
I'll start with this. I understand where you're coming from.
Yes.
I think there's simply no chance that the Angels are like,
correct,
we'll take one player back for like
and
ever.
He's 17 years old.
Doesn't matter who that player is.
This
right?
is like, this is not realistic. And this is not, but this is the case for the trade, right?
I don't think the Angels take back only Jackson Holliday for Shohei Ohtani. Yeah, you know,
I would
like,
probably do that.
I would probably do that. I don't think the Angels would do that.
This is maybe the only realistic bite at the apple that the Angels would have at a mega prospect when trading Shohei, because I don't think there's any other fits where the team's gonna be like, oh yeah, take Jackson Holliday and three other guys or whatever, right? Like,
right.
I don't think there's any other like elite prospects that will be available. And I think the only reason Salas will be available is because he is so young. You know, he's so young that the Padres could be like, let's show Ohtani's so cool and fun. We could pay him and not have to worry about paying Juan Soto. You know, so like get him in the building and hope that you can pay him. And Salas, just to catch everyone up here, I'm gonna.
So I know like nothing about Nathan Salas. So you're gonna
yes. So I will make the case for who this guy is. He was a I think Dominican. Oh, he was actually from Florida, but he's definitely like he was an international signing. So I don't know if he grew up in Dominican Republic where he's from. He was signed last year, Venezuela. Okay, he was signed last year. As far as with all these 16-year-olds, right? We talked about Felton and Celestin and stuff like that. He's kind of in that group, right? Very recent 16-year-old signing. Instead of he played in the major league spring training this year, he caught like Joe Musgrove, right? So like they were it was like really weird. It was a 17-year-old playing spring training and catching for major league pitchers. He is not played like in the Dominican Republic League. He hasn't played in like the complex league. He has played A ball this year at age 17. So at age 17, he is over 4 years younger than the average person playing in the league, right? He's like the youngest by multiple years playing in A ball. And he has a slash line of 276, 379, 490. That's a 869 OPS as a 17-year-old catcher who is supposed to have basically mega advanced catching feel. So the way I heard Keith Law describe it is imagine like a different universe where Adley Rutschman was a prospect as a 17, 18 year old, but he was like as far ahead as he was when he was 23. So that is the case. Okay. And this also would be in the universe where the Angels probably are throwing away Trout's, the rest of Trout's prime. Like maybe they have to trade him or whatever. Like they're just totally hitting the reset button. That is the case. It is not like the strongest case in the world, but I think it's,
what I'll say is like, I think it feels reasonably like, more even than like the bones of like, I honestly think if you take Salas and like toss in a couple of like
random flyers and stuff, yeah,
top 20 yeah. guys, like some of the like back end yeah. prospect, like guys who are still yeah. prospects,
I think that's
but
totally
like,
reasonable.
Not prospect, like I honestly could see the Angels doing it, like toss in a couple of guys who are like close to the majors who like you can be like, yeah, this is a guy, and then like in 5 years, like. Hey, do you guys know Ethan Salas was traded for?
here's Jackson yeah. Wolf and, like whatever middle infielder they got coming up, or outfielder. Like, yeah.
Right.
But yeah, the reason why I wanted to propose this is because it's best that I could fit, especially because it's probably not where it's like, this is what I need to encapsulate my ridiculous yeah. career DM of the Padres and burst hitting 17-year-old Uber prospect who's like after Jackson Holliday is gone or whatever the situation is, but it seems Wander Franco thing a year early. So that is why it's just like, would you take the shot at the next prospect if you have the chance with a rental, even if it's Shohei Ohtani,
Look, if you had one shot, yeah.
If you sure. have that, the entire, like where it says trade description, it's one shot. Like that's it,
Yeah, Ethan Salas is the bomb spaghetti. And
exactly.
It's
there's no more to this metaphor. It truly cannot hold.
Ivy. Like it would make sense to have just a couple more guys just because to make it like a complete deal. But I liked Icy the two because
exactly that's the thing. Right? And like a couple of guys again who like probably doesn't care about
swapped,
Right. So. Yeah. All right, Pat, why don't you give us your version of the Ohtani trade that hopefully maybe is a little bit more realistic than Dylan's?
I think this is the trade that wins this team the World Series. Okay. If this happens. So I have the Rays getting Shohei Ohtani.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Please, and God. I have going to the Angels, Junior Caminero, Curtis Meade, Kyle Manzardo, Mason Montgomery, and Shane Baz.
Oh.
This sets up the Angels for the future. This gets the Rays 60 games, 67, however many games are left, of Shohei Ohtani, plus it gets Shohei in the playoffs, and I think it wins them the World Series. My
God. That's more than the Padres gave up for Soto.
That's what it's going to take, because you're not, in theory, you're not trading for just one. You're trading for a player that fills two positions at an elite level.
My trade was like, Ethan Salas, really good. And then Caminero is like basically just as good as him. And you've got like four other guys that are like insane. It's like, oh my goodness.
And like the Rays can do it because they're so good at developing prospects. They'll have dudes that replace these guys in 3 years.
I don't think you're wrong.
Like the Shohei to the Rays trade just feels like the perfect fit for both teams.
I would love them to do a Shohei trade, because I think it would be just like our brains would be operating at a different level if the Rays got Shohei Ohtani. You know, it'd just be like every baseball nerd is just like, holy crap, this is it. This is the moment we've been waiting for, you know, where the Rays actually like put it together behind the greatest player to ever play baseball. I do think it's too much.
And then 4 months later, he's playing
they like lose in the World Series again, team. And then they leave. And then they are screwed.
Yeah. And he's a Dodger. Like, yeah.
I do think it's too much, though. Like, I think that is just like one notch too aggressive. Because I think when you start with Caminero, it's just like you're already like I would genuinely think the Rays would view him as untouchable.
So I was torn as to whether they would view him untouchable, but then I'm thinking like, this is Shohei Ohtani we're talking about.
Sell out everyone's the Trop, which how often does that happen? You know, like fans would actually go to the games, and the financial impact would be significant.
Like the only other player I could think of that would go instead of Caminero was Carson Williams, but like, this is getting the Angels what they need, and that's guys that are ready to hit the majors in the next year. Yeah,
because Manzardo and Mead would certainly be up within the next year, and then Caminero is probably another year away.
Yeah.
Who are the others again? Montgomery,
and then Shane Boss, who's recovering from Tommy John's surgery. But he'll come back, you know,
mid next year or something. And Montgomery, is he a pitcher?
Yeah. He's a pitcher, correct.
I have heard a variation of this where Taj Bradley's involved, and I kind of like that fit.
So that's what I threw out last week, was Taj Bradley being the player going back.
So maybe there's something, because like the Angels just have no pitching, and like, I mean, they don't have a lot of anything if they move Shohei Ohtani, but maybe they go more pitching heavy in a deal like this. Like you mentioned, the Phillies doing with Juan Soto, where they can just throw a bunch of pitchers at you and be like, do you want all these guys? These guys could be your entire rotation 2 years from now, you know? But the Caminero is legit. Like, he is so good, and he is such a perfect blue chip guy. I just think that for like top 50, top 100 guys on top of that is just too much for a rental. If it was a year and a half of Ohtani, I'd be like sick to my stomach, but I'd be like, you know what? Let's just do it. We'll have him for a full year. We can build around that. We can figure it out.
Yeah. I mean,
just, but like again, you won't even retain a pick after he's gone. You know what I mean? Like this is trading. Like,
this is a historic
25 years, 25 years of talented players or whatever it is. Right. Or 2 months of Shohei.
Yeah, but Dylan, if you had one shot.
This is the team, a team like the Rays that's positioned like they are now, to make this trade puts them over the top.
Yes.
Especially correct. In an AL that feels.
Flags fly forever, you know?
Yes.
I get where both of your trades are coming from. What I'll say is, if this is what we come up with for Shohei Ohtani trades, I think he's going to be an Angel in 2 weeks.
I mean, here's the thing: if that trade was offered to the Angels, they should take it
100%. I don't think the Rays are offering that to the Angels.
If mine was offered, they'd be like, I don't know.
I don't think it's getting offered.
Yeah, but I just think the Rays are not the type of team that are going to go overboard. I think they're willing to try it, but I think they're going to have to do their own mental math, or not mental math, like literal math, on which guys they're willing to do. And I don't think a singular player as good as Caminero or Salas is going to be involved in this deal. I think if you're like Manzardo, Mead and Bradley, or like in Boz, like I think if you had like those collection of guys without Caminero, I think that might be closer to what it would look like. But Caminero as the headliner plus those guys, I think it's even for the Rays, it's too much. Because mm-hmm. like it's just it just puts a nuke into their farm system, you know?
Yeah. But again, my thought process is the Rays are so good at developing prospects that
true. Yeah, yeah.
2 years, absolutely. 2 years down the line, point. They might not even really be feeling the effects of that trade.
Mm-hmm. You put a nuke into their farm system and then in a year they trade somebody else for eight guys who are just as good, you know, like, because it's just what they do.
It's funny thinking about that group. Do you know, like, I mean,
I know they got where Meade came Meade from. Don't.
Untitled National League team for
Christopher
nothing.
Christopher Sanchez.
I guess he's a major leaguer, but a bad one. And then they got Caminero in a deal from the Guardians, I guess when they were the Indians, like 3 years ago. And the guy they got him for is like a double-A farm guy for the Brewers. Like he got DFA'd like within the year that they acquired Caminero.
Tobias Myers.
So it's like Tobias Myers. Like these guys came out of nowhere and they developed them into, you know, Meade has not had a great season with Caminero. So it's like, yes, you are still correct. Like they'll just find these guys out of nowhere. But I think they need to retain Caminero or like some version of, you know, a couple of these guys to like guarantee they have a little bit more flexibility going into the future. And, you know, if you get outbid, you get outbid. But
yeah,
I think the Rays, for what it's worth, I think are also willing to be bad for 2 years, you know, like,
yeah,
I think if they, especially again, like, because I agree with where Pat's coming from, which is that Shohei like turns them into the World Series favorite.
Yeah.
And if you win a World Series and then like, you know, you're probably still pretty good for the next year or two. And then now you're moving guys and whatever, and you're bad for a year or two. And then suddenly you turn guys into, you know, like you turn every other crap prospect you pick up into a top five prospect. Right. Like, and then and like, I get it. The Rays do feel like, or the Rays, you know, probably at least to us, it feels like the Rays are a team that can find gold from truly nothing, and if they feel the same way about themselves and like, hey, let's get rid of some of that gold, get the guy who can right now turn us into the World Series favorite, and then you know, we'll be bad for 2 years from 27 to 28 and then be good again in 2029.
I think the Rays should be a serious Otani suitor. Like I think this just makes too much sense for them because they have enough guys. But I think if the Rays end up like in, we're sitting here on Sunday and Shohei Ohtani's traded to the Rays, like it's because they identify that they don't think other team, they saw a value play, right? They're not thinking we got a barrel over the Angels with a dump truck of prospects. They're saying other teams chickened out and the Angels lost their last six games. And we're able to kind of, I think this works out in our favor where we can trade for 120 cents on the dollar rather than 200 cents on the dollar, right? Because you're going to lose. You're going to quote unquote lose the trade.
Right.
That's what you just have to admit when Shohei Ohtani's moved, because you're trading really good players long term for 2 years of a, 2 months of a guy. And it doesn't matter how good the guy is. The other guys are probably going to end up being better in the long run. You know, but the closer you can get it to a split is better. And the Rays are going to be doing that calculus for the next week straight with anyone they acquire. And yeah, so I think a lot of these names you mentioned are also really important, because I think there's lots of guys on there that will be dangled either in this or other similar types of things. I just don't think Caminero is in there.
All right. Well, we'll know in a week, hopefully, whether or not Shohei is even on the trade block.
We might have wasted the last 20 minutes in hypothetical land.
It's
for
fun,
nothing.
Right? It's fun. We have fun here, right?
I'm glad I did it.
I don't think any of these trades are close to realistic. I think like one or two of them. Maybe one of the nine trades. I think maybe two of them are close-ish.
Come on, Max Scherzer on the Reds.
Max Scherzer. But they were fun. Hey, it's always fun to talk about crazy impossible trades. Did we run any of these through the website?
No, I didn't.
I have not, and I'm scared to run the Rays trade through the website.
Like, one, anything Ohtani is not going to work out on the website. Two, anything involving real salary doesn't work on the website because they just think Max Scherzer would just be like, oh, you're salary dumping Max Scerzer. And we know that's not going to
work. I think nothing works on the website.
I mean, it's funny. I like it because it's funny.
It's absolutely fun.
But I it almost works for no real trade other than like moderate player for moderate player, neither of which are on a contract. Like challenge trades involving like okay players. You know,
yeah, I that's one thing I say about it's baseballtradevalues.com, right?
Yeah.
That's what I'll say. Like, hey, it's a fun thing. I don't think it's a very good tool,
right?
But it's fun.
It's fun.
It's fun.
And we
absolutely
we got
the featured trades on there. I'll look here. It says the two featured trades it has are Rangers get Shohei for Jack Leiter, Sebastian Walcott, and Owen White.
Oh, that was on Effectively Wild. That was one of the 21 Effectively Wild trades. And it was, I think they added another pitcher to that. The winning trade of the 21 ended up being the Diamondbacks, actually. They included Fott and Drew Jones and two others. So that ended up being the top of the 21 offers for Shohei on that podcast. So that's a great listen if y'all are into this nonsense that we just went through.
I'll drop that in the show notes as well. Yeah. So you can
it's a good listen.
That podcast from this podcast. The other feature trade on here, by the way, is Marcus Stroman for Mason Black and Randy Rodriguez from the Giants.
Sure. I think the Giants are another Shohei team that they should do it. I don't think they probably will, but they should.
I don't think they've got, well,
I don't
Kyle
know if
Harrison
they should.
And Kyle I would make Harrison, a trade Luciano could get it done.
I think they're another team that's like, well, the other team's chicken out. We'll be in good position, but you know, before that, who knows?
Yeah, they're like right in a spot, but I don't know. Maybe I don't know. I guess they've been, yeah. Sure. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. Quite a long one, despite very little news. a lot of
great segment.
It's a great two great segments, really. So that's going to do it. Rain Delay Radio is executive produced by Lewis. My name is Naim. I edited this episode. I also hosted it along with Dylan and Pat. Our theme music is composed by Chuck Leese. Rain Delay Radio releases every Monday morning at 1 a.m. Eastern Time. And we will talk to you next week.